అధ్యాయం విష్ణుపాద పరమహంస పరిభ్రాచరాచార్య అష్టోత్తరశత శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ అభయ చరణారవింద భక్తి వేదాంత గోస్వామి హర శీల జయం మిత్రీల ప్రవిష్ట విష్ణుపాద పరమహంస పరిభ్రాచరాచార్య భక్తి సిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి మహారాజ్ శ్రీల ప్రభుపాదికి ఆనందకొడి వైష్ణవ బృందకి నామాచార్య శ్రీ హరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్ కి ప్రేమ సకహో శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త బృందకి శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధాకృష్ణ గోప గోపినాథ శ్యామకుండ రాధాకుండగిరి గోవర్ధానికి బృందావన్ ధామికి మాయాపూర్ ధామికి మధురపురి ధామికి జగన్నాథ్పురి ధామికి ద్వారకాపురి ధామికి గంగామాయికి యమునమాయికి తులసీదేవికి భక్తిదేవికి సామవేద భక్త బృందకి గౌర్ ప్రేమానంది ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీ శ్రీ గురు అని గౌరవంగ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శీల ప్రభుపాద్ మమ విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణ ప్రస్థాయ భూతలే శ్రీమతే భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామిని ఇది నామిని నమస్తే సరస్వతీదేవీ గౌరవాణి ప్రజారిణి నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశధారిణి ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ సంసార సాగరే మగ్నం దీనం మాం కరుణానిధే కర్మగ్రాహ గృహీతాంగం మాముద్ధర భవానవాల్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవదాఖ్యోయం ప్రత్యక్ష కృష్ణమేవ హి స్వీకృతోసి మయా నాథ ముక్త్యర్థం భవ సాగరే మనోరథే మదీయోయం సఫలా సర్వదా త్వయా నిర్విఘ్నేనైవ కర్తవ్యం దాసోహం తవ కేశవ భవే భవే యథా భక్తి పాదయోస్తవ జాయతే తథా కురుష్య దేవేషా నాదస్త్వం నో యద ప్రభో నామ సంకీర్తనం యస్య సర్వభావ ప్రణాశనం ప్రణామో దుఃఖ శమనత్తం నమామి హరిం వరం జన్మాద్యస్యదోన్వయాదితరదశ్చార్తేష్వభిజ్ఞస్వరాన్ తేనే బ్రహ్మహృదాయ ఆదిగవయే ముహ్యంతి యల్ సూరయ తేజోవారిమృదం యథా వినిమయో యత్ర త్రిసర్గో మృష ధామ్నా స్వేన సదా నిరస్త కుహకం సత్యం వరం ధీమహి ధర్మ ప్రోజ్జిత కైదవోత్ర వరమో నిర్మల్సరాణం సదా వేద్యం వాస్తవమత్ర వస్తు శివదం తాపత్రయోన్మూలనం శ్రీమద్భాగవతే మహాముని కృతే కిం వా పరైరీశ్వర సద్యో హృద్యవరుద్యదేత్రకృతి శుశ్రూషుభీ తల్క్షణాల్ నిగమకల్పనరోర్గలితం బలం శుకముఖాదమృతద్రవ సంయుతం పిబత భాగవతం రసమాలయం ముహురహో రసిగా భువి భావుగాహం సచ్చిదానందరూపాయ విశ్వోల్పత్యాదిహేతవే పాపత్రయ వినాశాయ శ్రీకృష్ణాయ వయం నుమా యం ప్రవ్రజంతమనుపేదమపేదకృత్యం ద్వైవాయనో విరహకాదరమజుహావ పుత్రేది తన్మయదయత్తరవోభినేదు తం సర్వభూతహృదయం మునిమానతోస్మి యస్వానుభావమఖిల శ్రుతిసారమేకం అధ్యాత్మదీపమదితి తీర్షదాం తమంధం సంసారిణాం కరుణయాః పురాణగుహ్యం దం వ్యాససూనుముపయామి గురుం మునీనాం నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం జైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తదో జయముదీరయేత్ కమనీయ కిశోర ముగ్ధమూర్తే కళవేణూకుణితాదృదానేందో మమ వాచి విజృంభదా మురారే మధురిం న కణికాపి కాపికాపి నమా ఓం విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణ ప్రస్థాయ భూతలే శ్రీమదే భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామిన్నిది నామినే నమస్తే సరస్వతీదేవీం గౌరవాణి ప్రజారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశధారిణే శ్రీమల్ గురుచరణారవిందాభ్యాం నమ వందే నందం వ్రజ స్త్రీణాం పాదరేణుమభీష్ణశాయాసం హరిగదోద్గీతం పునాది భువనత్రయం గోపీచరణారవింద పరమాణవే నమ పీతాంబరం కరవిరాజిత చక్రశంగం కౌమోదగీ సరసిజం కరుణా సముద్రం రాధా సహాయమది సుందరమందహాసం వాతాలయేశమనిశం హృది భావయామి കോമളം കൂജയൻ വേണം ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മാവാസദാം പുരതോ മമ മുഖം കരോതി വാചാലം ഭംഗം ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ ഓം പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണ മുനിനാ മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണി ഭഗവതി അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനി അമ്പത്വാമനുസന്ദദാമി ഭഗവത്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണി നമോസ്തു ദേ വ്യാസ വിശാലബുദ്ധേ ഫുല്ലാരവിന്ദായത പത്രനേത്ര യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരത തൈലപൂർണ പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപ പ്രപന്ന പാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേത്രൈകവാണയേ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമ സർവോപനിഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഗ്ധാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സ സുധീർഭോക്താ ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹത് വസുദേവ സുതം ദേവം കംസച്ചാണൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതടാ ജയദ്രഥ ജല ഗാന്ധാര നീലോൽപല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതീ കൃപേണ വഹനി കർണേന വേലാകുല അശ്വത്ഥാമാ വികർണഘോരമകരാ ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനി സുതീർണക്കലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണനദീ കൈവർത്തക കേശവ പാരാശര്യവജസരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനക കേസരം ഹരികഥാ സംബോധനാബോധിതം ലോകൈ സജ്ജനഷൽപദൈരഹരഹ പേബീയമാനം മുദ ഭൂയാദ് ഭാരതപങ്കജ കളിമലപ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ മുഖം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽ കൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യം ബ്രഹ്മാവരുണേന്ദ്ര രുദ്രമരുത സ്വന്വന്തി ദിവ്യൈ സ്തവൈർ വേദൈ സാംഗപദൈ ക്രമ ഉപനിഷദൈർ ഗായന്തിയം സമഗാഹം ജ്ഞാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തിയം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാ സുരഗണൈഹി ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ So these four days, what we are trying to do is to make ourselves aware the importance of Vedam. Sometimes we don't understand it because we think certain things happen in this life automatically, isn't it? Like you see, for example, today is Prabhupada's appearance day, right? Why Prabhupada has affected so many people? Because of the Vedam. We have to remember these things. You just don't look at a person and think that he has come here and spoken about Krishna consciousness. Where does it all originate from? It's come from the Vedam. Vedam is behind everything. It is the engine behind the whole way of life. Sanatana Dharma is driven by Vedam. Vedam is behind it. You can, probably we don't notice, understand these things very much. We don't give much importance to it because we take it for granted many things in life, isn't it? So that is where the problem is. When Krishna says in the Bhagavadam about Vedam, what he said, if we look into the 21st chapter in the 11th canto, there is the verse 36, he says here, Shabda Brahma Sudurbhodam, he says. Pranendriya Manomayam Anandabharam Gambhiram Durvigahyam Samudravad, he says. This is his opening verses on the Vedam, what he says. Shabda Brahma Sudurbhodam. Most difficult to understand, he says. Sudurbhodam. Durbhodam itself is difficult. Sudurbhodam means more difficult. That is how difficult Vedam is. Shabda Brahmam Sudurbhodam. He says, Pranendriya Manomayam Anandabharam Gambhiram Durvihahyam Samudravad. Right? Because Shabda Brahmam is very sushmam. Extremely subtle it is. Shabda Brahmam. You remember Adishesha Bhagavan told Chitrakedu, Shabda Brahmam Parabrahmam Mamobhe Shashwati Tanu. I have two forms, he said. One is Shabda Brahmam, other one is Parabrahmam. That Shabda Brahmam is Vedam. I have two forms, he said. Shabda Brahmam and Parabrahmam. If you look into the sixth canto, you will find these things. That Chitragedu goes, Sri Narada Maharshi fast-tracked him to spiritual world. You can only say that word about that, what happened. Chitragedu wasn't ready for it. But because of Narada Maharshi's mercy, he got fast-tracked to spiritual world. 7 days, he said, you'll be there in 7 days. So he took it very seriously, chanted the mantra given to him, and he got into the spiritual world. When he got there, Krishna wasn't there. Balram was there. So he meets Balram, and Balram speaks to him. It's in the Bhagavatam, in the sixth canto. And there he says, Shabda Brahmam Parabrahmam Mamobhe Shashwati Tanu. I have two eternal existence. One is in the form of Parabrahmam, other one is in the form of Shabda Brahmam. It is that Shabda Brahmam is the Vedam. Vedam. So, Veda Purusha, what it is called, it's given as a form to that, like a human form, it's given, Purusha form, it is called. And the body has got so many limbs, hands, legs, nose and all that. In the same way, Veda Angam is these six different things we were talking about yesterday. Shiksha, Vyagranam, Niruktam, Chandasya, Jyotisham, Kalpam, all these things. They are the limbs of Veda Purusha. That Purusha's different parts of the body. So, this Vedangam, Krishna is saying also here, we'll just go through a few verses about Vedam, what he said. Next word, he says, Durvigahim Samudravat. It's so difficult, he said. It's like an ocean. Vast ocean it is, this Vedam. Right? And Mayava Brahmidam Bhumna Brahmana Ananda Shaktina Bhudesha Ghosha Rubena Visesh Urneva Lakshyate. He says, and this Vedam binds everybody. All living entities is bound by Vedam. How? He says here that just like in the lotus flower in the stem, there are these threads like thing in that, isn't it? Similarly, this Vedam binds all of us through the sound. We all make different sounds, is it not? And this sound vibration is the one, the presence of the Vedam in everybody. It is accepted like that, right? Bhudeshu ghosha rupena viseshurneva lakshyate, right? So, Nada Brahmam is present inside all of us, and in a very subtle level, subtle form, it is present inside us. Then he said, Yatha urna nabir kadaya urna muddhamate mukhal. Lot of things are, what Krishna has spoken is too subtle to understand. So generally, the tendency is, people don't read these verses, because it's too subtle to understand what it is, these verses are, right? And there he mentioned, Chando Mayo Amrudamaya Sahasra Padavim Prabhu Omangaral Vindas Prashastarosh Ushmandasta Bhushidam. Then he says about the Gayatri and then Chandasa, different Chandasa, Anushtubha Brahadi Pankti, the names he has mentioned. And finally he is saying that in Vedam, basically what it is, he says, in Karma Gandam I am worshipped in the form of yajnam, sacrifices. In the Upasana Gandam, which is the Bhakti Kandam, they call it, I am worshipped in different forms. That's where Upasana Kandam in the Vedam comes from that. In Karma Kandam, it is through sacrifices. Krishna is worshipped. In the Upasana Kandam, Krishna is worshipped in different forms. All the other forms of the Devadas. It's all Krishna's different forms. He's saying here, I am present in those different forms in the Upasana Kandam, which is called as the Bhakti Kandam. And in the Jnana Gandam, it is spoken about me, it is, I am myself, that Jnana Gandam itself is me. Krishna is saying here. So, Maam Vidate Abhidate Maam Vigalpya Ahuyade Tvaham Edavan Sarva Veda Artha Shabdham Astaya Maam Vidam. And Vedam is completely dependent on me. Krishna is saying like this, that while talking about me, what Vedam does is, like in the Shruti Gita, what it has happened, that this Dvaita Prapancha, this creation, where we are experiencing all kinds of duality, And it allows that first, and then it denies that. Right? And comes out and says that I am the only reality. Means consciousness is the only reality. That is established in the Veda. Krishna is saying that. That first it allows the manifested world, and then it denies that later on. And that is what Shruti Gita also does. Now you can imagine, Vedam prayers to Krishna has been given a very important important reference in the Bhagavatam, isn't it? Shruti Gita, 87th chapter, right? And if you understand that Shruti Gita very well, you must have understood Bhagavatam something. That's what it means. That's why out of the four topics in the Bhagavatam, to test the student of a Bhagavatam, how far he has progressed in the Bhagavatam, one of the topics is Shruti Gita. That if you are able to understand Shruti Gita to some degree, what is spoken there in the Shruti Gita, then that means you have some understanding of Bhagavatam. Like Krishna's instructions to Uddhava, another topic, Ekadasha Skandam. And similarly, Kapila Maharshi's teachings to Devahuti Devi. And similarly, Jarabharata's teachings to Rahugana. These four topics in the Bhagavatam. They come in different cantos, third canto, and then in the fifth canto, and in the tenth canto, and in the eleventh canto. So normally, good students who are advancing in studying Srimad Bhagavatam, they will be tested. If you can explain these four topics in the Bhagavatam in agreement with the Bhagavatam and agreement with all the other Shastram, that means you have some understanding of Bhagavatam. That's how they verify that. So, now look at this difference. First of all, I'll just mention what these six things are, and then we'll go back to that authority of the Vedam, coming back to the same thing. So, Shiksha is the first one out of the six, right? So, the Shiksha is considered to be the nose of Veda Purusha. Vedam is considered like a form, a human form. In that, the nose is considered to be Shiksha. Why is that? It enables us to breathe, and which sustains our life, isn't it? So you can imagine the importance of the nose. Breathing happens because of that we survive, isn't it? A form survives because of the breathing. So similarly, it is given importance for Shiksha. Shiksha is the part which keeps the Vedams. Vedams breathing is called a Shiksha. Right? So, when you say, recite a Vedic hymn, Vedic mantra, right? Where is the life of that, or that mantra, right? You know that everything has to be spoken very precisely. The sound is concerned. You can't have different accents to it. Like English has got so many accents you speak with, is it not? But it's not allowed. In the Vedam, you can't have different accents. You can't say, this is the South Indian accent, this is the North Indian accent. That's not allowed in the Vedam. That you will see a lot of beautiful things to understand from this. That, how did it survive like this? In a country which is today so vast in that sense, so many different traditions of studying Vedam. Punjab to Kanyakumari, you will see so many varieties. But how come there is no difference in the way they are reciting the Vedam? Is that not wonderful? How did this happen? From Punjab to right up to the deep south, Vedam is recited in the same way. Why? Because they were particular about this, the Shiksha. Shiksha was the one which was, Shiksha was taught first. And Shiksha make sure that you don't deviate in these things. For example, Bhagavatam you can deviate. I will read in one way, you will read in another way, somebody else will read in a different way. According to our, the tongue, how it operates, right? But in Vedam, not. It doesn't happen. A scholar from South and a scholar from Kashmir, if he recites the Vedam, it will be the same. It won't be different. This is the beauty, first thing. So, that is called, in Shastram they call it as Akshara Shuddhi. The purity of your speech. The purity, right? And then the pitch of the sound. That's what they call it as ഉദാത്തം അനുദാത്തം സ്വരിതം ഹയർ മിഡിൽ ആൻഡ് ലോവർ പിച്ചസ് ദാറ്റ്സ് വാട്ട് ദേ ആർ ഉദാത്തം അനുദാത്തം ആൻഡ് സ്വരിതം ഹയർ മിഡിൽ ആൻഡ് ലോവർ പിച്ചസ് ദീസ് തിങ്സ് ആർ ട്രെയിൻഡ് ടു ദ ചൈൽഡ് ഫ്രം ദ വെരി ഏർലി ലൈഫ് സോ ദാറ്റ് ഇറ്റ് വിൽ നെവർ ചേഞ്ച് ആൻഡ് ഇറ്റ് റിമെയിൻഡ് ലൈക് ദാറ്റ് ഫോർ ഹൗ ലോങ് ഫോർ എ സച്ച് എ ലോങ് ടൈം ഇറ്റ് റിമെയിൻഡ് ലൈക്ക് ദാറ്റ് നോബഡി കുഡ് ടാമ്പർ വിത്ത് ഇറ്റ് Nobody could tamper with it. And if you have tried to tamper, others will find out. So there was a sort of a balancing system whereby it survived like that. So that is called as the purity of the tone, tonal purity, we call it. Right? Swara, swara shuddhi, or means the way you speak, the purity of that. Right? So... the emphasis is on this, how you recite the Veda properly, without any mistakes in that. Right? Because if you don't, then the mantras have lost its power. The mantra is only pure, only if it is recited in the proper way, it has its power. A slight example is in the sixth canto. You know that. Vritrasura story, right? Indrashatro Vivardhaswa. That story is to indicate this point. That a small mistake happened, the meaning changed. This is how powerful it is. So it is such an important thing that in Vedam you can't question anything, you just have to accept it. And you have to follow it rigidly, without any changes. Right? So even if one does not know the meaning, if you have spoken it correctly, the result will come. You see? Even if you have not understood the meaning of the mantra, but if your pronunciation was correct, or the tonal purity was there, then guarantees the results, expected results. Right? Therefore, the life of the Vedas, which are only a string of... mantras is sustained by this sound alone. Sound is the most important thing there. You may not understand the meaning, but maintaining that sound. Even today, in very, very remote villages, certain families still trying to keep it. They struggle very hard in this modern way of life, but they are so particular that... how they try to teach their children who are serious about it to maintain that and training their children all the time in this process. Right. For example, there is a mantra for, suppose you are bitten by a scorpion or a snake, there is a mantra for that. How to... how to bring the poison down. Now, the meaning of the mantra will not be revealed. It won't tell you. They won't tell you that. They will chant the mantra and the poison will go away from the body. Scorpion or snake, both. There are still people there. In remote villages you find this still. Very remote villages. Of course, there's not many snakes left now. You have killed all of them. So there is no necessity for the... and then there is also in the... It is become very rare now to have people who can do all these things. There are very few now. So therefore, what happens now? Snake bite happens. They take them to hospital. And immediately there is this anti-venom thing. They inject that and try to save. But in the past, it wasn't there. Completely depend on the mantra. They did that. Similarly, at the time of Shraddha ceremony, when Shraddham happens, right, it has to be recited in Sanskrit. Now if you say, why don't you translate into English and we'll make the mantra in English? It's not allowed. It has to be recited in Sanskrit. It is a mandatory requirement. Because their sound is different in English, even though you can translate it, or Hindi or Tamil or whatever language, you can translate it. But the sound is different when you translate it, right? Therefore, they are not acceptable, right? So, so how do they maintain this purity through this shiksha, right? So, the function of these shiksha shastram is to fix the parameters of the various words in the Vedam, right? So, so shiksha has the upper hand over everything else. This thing called a shiksha, over compared to all other five, kalpam, niruktam, chandas, vyagaranam, all other five, beyond than that, shiksha has a higher influence on the Vedam. They all are keeping the Vedam together so that Vedam won't get lost. And that's how they protected Vedam for so many years. Now, when Vedam came into existence, we'll see that later, how the Western scholars, they try to determine the origin of the Vedam. What they did was, they told us that that it happened, of course, they agree, before Jesus Christ. So it is B.C. But how many years before B.C.? This question came up. So they said it couldn't be more than 2,000 years. This is how they are saying about Vedam, right? 2,000 B.C., they say, they give one. Now I'll discuss that later when I come to about this time factor of that. What I'm saying is that how you can easily misguide others with your ignorance and mislead a lot of people in that process and make them to lose their faith in the Shastram. Traditionally, every cultured, learned people in Bharatvarsham accepted Vedam as eternal. It has no beginning and neither end either. Neither beginning nor end. That was accepted in the higher circles. Ordinary people may not know about it because they just didn't have the time to study Vedam. But by and large, anyone who are very much absorbed in the Shastram or who followed the culture seriously or who has studied the literature, they always accepted Vedam is eternal. It has neither beginning nor end. That is the system in the Vedam. But unfortunately, the modern historians gave it a time to it. Why did they do this? That's another question. Why did they do that? So something which is timeless, they injected this time factor into it. This is where first mistake happened. And even today, the scholars have to fight against this. Because what happened? This system started, they convinced us there must be a time to it. They told us like that. And gradually it was taught in the schools, colleges and universities everywhere. And our own people started, Indians themselves started believing this, that there must be a time behind it. And they started bringing that into the equation. And this is how they got trapped in that. It's a gradual thing what happened, and they themselves become victimized by that. And today if you tell them that it is timeless, they are finding it difficult to accept it. Because our buddhi has gone like that. Slowly this education process, that's what it has done. Right? So, so this shiksha, what we are discussing here, right? it has a impact on our sound. That is what it controls. Shiksha. Shiksha means the control of the sound or the pronunciation of the Vedam. That's what it is meant to be, right? So, it is also partly connected with yoga. Yoga means referring to Patanjali's yoga. In the sense that the way the air travels inside our body while we speak, the flow of air determines the way the sound comes out. Isn't it? You know that. That's how it comes out. The rishis understood this technique. How to control the flow of air inside the body and control the flow of the air that produces the sound at the end. That means they had a very deep understanding of the flow from the moment the thought developed inside and then he traveled through the, you know, that Parapashanda Madhyama, and when it comes to Vaikiri stage, how the changes are happening in the sound, formation of the sound. They understood this, and that is Shiksha Shastra. That is the Shiksha Shastra. Right? Because it goes through different pulse centers, they are called in the body. And you can see when it passes through different pulse centers, these are our thoughts. Various emotions are created inside us, is it not? You can imagine a certain sound, when you speak, when you are angry, when your emotions are very high inside, you are very angry inside, and when you speak, it comes out in one form. And when you are very good inside, that means you are very peaceful inside, the same sound when you speak, it comes out in a different way. Isn't it? We all know that. This is not difficult to understand. How our emotions control the sound. That means when it passes through these different pulse centers, they call it, that different emotions has an interaction with the sound what is coming out from us, or the flow of air inside, which is carrying the sound with it. The air is carrying the sound. So these emotions interact with it and changes everything. So while reciting the Vedam, these things should be controlled properly. Otherwise it won't have its effect. That is how difficult it is to get a child of 5 years old who does not understand the technical side of these things. Only advantage you have there is it is easily possible to manipulate him, the child. Once you are grown up, then it is hard to change. We are all got stuck in a particular way of speaking, our sound also, everything. That is why they get them at the very early age. 3-4 years they start this. By the age of 5, the teacher should know that the sound that is coming out from him is the right sound. That means the first the teacher should know the right sound. Only then he can teach the student. And then whatever adjustments necessary to get the right sound, he will do that with his head. Turning the head this way, that way, tuning the neck, everything, so that he get it right at the end. It will look a little bit cruel to them. If you see all these things on the YouTube, it look cruel. But how do you do such a thing to this poor child, 5-year-old child? But it's not considered to be cruel. It's considered to be for his own benefit, betterment for him. Because if he learns how to speak properly, then his prayers also, his recitation of the Vedam. After all, you have to remember, there is no prayer in this world which pleases Krishna more than the Vedam. Reciting the Vedam is the one what Krishna loves more than anything else. That is why traditionally in all the big temples, reciting Vedam was the first prayer to Krishna. Nothing pleases more than that, reciting the Vedam. Therefore, they had a system in the past, many, many hours were allocated for the scholars to recite the Vedam in the temple to please the deity. But that system has gone away, reduced now because of the shortage of scholars to come, and temples have become more busy with various other activities. Temple worship has affected all that, isn't it? Because you're getting millions of people coming every day, and you got to accommodate everybody, otherwise there will be problem. So what they did, they cut short of things which are causing problem in the temple. So Vedic scholars also thought the people who are coming are also like that. They are not taking all this very seriously. So they also withdraw from the scene. So only in few temples for a few hours in a day, they do it as a sort of a ritual it is done. But traditionally it wasn't like that. This was the main major worship of Krishna means through the Vedam. Vedam is what pleases Krishna more than anything else. There are families who had worshipped the deity through the Vedam, and deity has spoken that I would like to hear that. That is how that was, they have spoken, the deities have spoken. So how important it is for them to hear the sound of the Vedam, what was spoken. So, Shiksha does this, and how to change the different tones, everything. So, therefore, it is not possible to do it in any other language. It has to be in Sanskrit only, no other language. It is possible. And there is a lot of laws related to pronunciation, everything. And this is how the Shiksha Shastram, the science of Shiksha Shastram came into existence. So you get a general idea what Shiksha means then, isn't it? What Shiksha means is breathing of the Veda Purusha or Vedam. Breathing means it is the very essence of the Vedam, and Shiksha is the most important part of that. Out of the six limbs of the body, the breathing part of it, right? Then we have the next one is grammar. Next one is grammar. I don't know what's your understanding of grammar in Sanskrit is, right? In the those who are grown up in ISKCON, they will understand grammar through what our ISKCON scholars have spoken about it, like they've spoken about Jiva Goswami's grammar books and all that, isn't it? What he has written about that. But they are fairly new books compared to the Shastram behind it. Jiva Goswami lived about 500 years ago, you can say, roughly. He wrote the books, isn't it? Harinama, Vyakaranam, what they wrote, right? But Vyakaranam's history, if you look, it is unbelievable, it is, the history behind Vyakaranam. Why is it so? Reason is that Vyakaranam, the words comes out through the mouth, isn't it, when we speak, right? And there was a rishi by name Panini. He comes from Afghanistan at that time. It was then. Today's Afghanistan, don't look at it. Pointless. It is looking at Afghanistan today. But Afghanistan, one time, were the land of the rishis, like Kashmir, and Pakistan also. At that time, it was like that. So he comes from Afghanistan, and at that time, Panini was so clever that he understood that this Vyakaranam Shastram, the Shastram of Vyakaranam, he wrote in the form of sutram, or aphorisms it's called, right? And on that Vyakarana Sutram, what he wrote, he codified everything. He wrote the Shastram of Vyakaranam in such a way that he created the code for, and he must have been so brilliant to do this. It was impossible for anybody else to do that. Somehow Krishna has gifted him with this power to do so. And because people could not understand that, what happened? There was another sage by name Vararuji. He wrote a commentary on Panini's Vyakarana Sutra. He wrote, right? And then, again, people were finding it difficult at the same time. This all happened at different times. Vararuji wrote a commentary on Panini's Vyakarana Sutra. And then Patanjali comes. Patanjali wanted to write a commentary on this. And Patanjali's commentary is also known as Mahabhashyam. Famous commentary. Patanjali was a rishi himself, isn't it? So this Patanjali understood. You know how much rishis gave importance to this body? They knew the whole secret of creation is inside this body, if you can understand this body properly. Therefore, Patanjali said, there are three things in the body. First thing, what you speak. And another one, your gross body. Right? And the third thing he mentioned here is the and the mind. The mind, speech, and the body. If you can control these three things well, you can go up in spiritual life. Your body, the mind, and the speech. So he gave importance to these three. So what did he do? He took Panini's grammar and he wrote his commentary on that. Patanjali wrote his commentary on the grammar, and which is helpful for speech. How to speak without flaw, without any mistakes. Right? And then he understood the body needs something, also to be looked after. So in Ayurvedam, there is a Charaka Samhita there, Ashtanga Hridayam and Charaka Samhita. He wrote his commentary on that as well, on the Ayurvedam. He got that commentary on that. And for the mind, he wrote Yoga Sutra, Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. You must have heard that, very famous. Like Vedavyasa Maharshi's Vedanta Sutram, Patanjali's Yoga Sutram for the body. So Patanjali took all the three, the mind, body and the speech. For the mind, he wrote Yoga Sutram. For the body, he wrote Charaka Samhita. And for the speech, he wrote the Vyakaranam, commentary. The commentary. So that you can speak without flaw. Without flaw. So, his commentary became very popular. Vararuji's didn't. Vararuji also wrote a commentary. You know who Vararuji is, don't you? Yeah. Who had that 12 children? Who accepted one thing? He said, what did he say? He said that you can't change your destiny. He said, poor Brahmana, he had to marry a girl from a very, very lower caste. And he came to know about this way in advance, that this will happen in his life. And he tried to avoid that, get out of the situation. But he couldn't. Destiny followed him. To show to us how powerful the faith is. If something is meant to happen, it will hit you. If Prarabdham decides that you have to suffer something, it will get you. Because that is what we have come here for, to get through the Prarabdham. You may do anything you like, but you won't be able to escape from Prarabdham. It will get you at the end. So Vararuji said, I offer my obeisances to Prarabdham, he said, at the end. He said how it caught him at the end. That whole story is there. And then 12 children were born from that. And for each child, when it was born, he said, asked the wife, that has it got a mouth? If it has got a mouth, then the who has created will feed the child. I don't have to worry about it. And they left. He told the wife, leave the child there and go. And then they walked away from there. So this happened in Vararuji's life. Vararuji lived at the time of Vikramaditya's time, in his palace, right? So, but Panini's Mahabhashyam on grammar became extremely popular. So many children used to come to study from him. This Panini's commentary, or commentary on Panini's Vyakarana Sutram by Patanjali, they used to come to study that, right? So it is a big story. This whole thing is so big. It is. Patanjali came to Chidambaram. In Tamil Nadu is a big temple, Chidambaram, Lord Shiva's temple. If you go there, you will see this Nataraja form of Shiva dancing and these two rishis sitting at his feet, Vyakravada and Patanjali. They are sitting at his feet. And one student from Kashmir came to know that he wanted to learn grammar and he wanted to learn from Patanjali. So he heard that Patanjali is teaching grammar there in Chidambaram. So he comes there to learn. Right. And and Patanjali, who is Patanjali? Patanjali is Adishesha himself, who teaches this. He is Adishesha's another expansion himself. Right. So what happened was, he was going to start teaching this in Chidambaram. He was going to start teaching this, right? And there is a 1,000 pillar hall there in that temple where he was teaching this, right? And he had 1,000 students also to learn from him in that time, because he was so famous and highly reputed he was for learning. He was the only source to learn, and they come to him, right? So he looked at the students and he realized that teaching all of them, and they will have various doubts also while he was teaching them, right? So he could not teach with one mouth. So he decided to take his original form, Adishesha. And he comes there as Adishesha with 1,000 heads, and he is teaching. But from Adishesha's mouth, this poisonous air is coming out. So through his yogic power, he put a curtain in front of him, between the students and the teacher. He put a curtain there, so that the air won't go into them and affect them, the students. Right? He knew that even in the slightest breath from Adishesha hits anybody, he'll be turned into ashes straight away. Right? Therefore, he started teaching behind, from staying behind a screen. He started teaching. Right? So he told them that if anybody goes out when I am teaching, then he will not come back, he said. He was so strict about that. Right? So, what he said was, if you leave the hall when I am teaching, you will become a Brahmarakshasa. Now, all are Brahminical children, Brahmana boys they are, who are learning this. If any one of you leave the hall, you will become a Brahmarakshasa. You know what Brahmarakshasa is? Brahmarakshasa, try to understand this also, because we don't understand many other living entities in this world. We only see what we see and we call them in whatever way we call it, right? Brahmarakshasa is something similar to a ghost, right? There are, among the ghosts also, there are many types. I know if you say all these things to a modern educated person from the university, you won't believe in it. All this, you'll think all this is, does exist, right? But it does exist. And there was a time people were aware of all these things, different types of ghosts, right? And there are many types which belong to these categories also, right? For example, among men also, there are different types of men, isn't it? Similarly, in the birds also, you see, there are different types of birds. Some of them crawl and some of them move very slowly. Some of them fly very fast. So even among the birds, you find the different categories, isn't it? Among the birds. Like peacock is also a bird, but peacock doesn't fly that high or that fast. Whereas you look at an eagle, how fast he can fly and how high he can go. So if this is possible in one species, why it's not possible in other species? If you look at any species, you will find differences. Even though they are all birds, among the birds also, different birds have different abilities. Krishna has given them like that. Eagles can see a dead body lying here, few miles in the up in the sky from there. He'll be able to notice that and then comes and gets his food from there, like that. Whereas we don't have that. That's why they call it Gridhradrishti. Gridhradrishti means to see things from such a long distance. Its eyes have got that power. Now, where did that power come from? That is by Krishna's arrangement. Isn't it? Krishna's given that power to that living entity like that. Similarly, birds have got the power to fly, which we don't have. We have to develop this technology and all that things to fly. So, whatever it is that all these things you get to know from Vedam, right? And similarly, among the demigods also, there is variety there. Like in the human species, there is differences. In the demigods also, there is differences in their ability. In their ability. So, therefore, we understand all these things from the Vedam. But the difference between us and the demigods is that those who have got this knowledge at the time of birth, they are the demigods. We have to study Vedam to know these things. So big difference between us and the demigods is this. Demigods have all this knowledge right from the birth itself, without even studying the Vedam. They don't study Vedam. Only we study Vedam. Only human society has to study the Vedam. So that's why they are called that for whom the knowledge is self-evident. There's word there, Swayam Pratibhada Veda. Swayam Pratibhada. That means on their own they know the whole thing at the time of birth itself. Right? Now, in the Vedam, there is a major part called the rituals and sacrifices, which is the Yajurvedam side of it. lot of it is rituals. So much rituals in the Vedam and sacrifices. And Mimamsa side is the one which talks about the this aspect of it, the ritual side. That's why Yajnam is very difficult to write off from the Vedam, because 80% of the Vedam is Yajnam. 80% almost is Yajnam related to sacrifices. Upanishads and all, which is the Jnanamargam, is only a very small part of it, which is at the very end. So, which is studied by the sannyasis and those who are looking for self-realization, right? So, Jaimini wrote a commentary on the Mimamsa side, Karma Mimamsa, as it is called, right? And he has got his sutrams on that, like Vedavyasa Maharshi's Vedanta Sutram is the Upanishads. He put into form of sutram, that is the Vedanta Sutram, or what we call Brahma Sutram. And similarly, Jaimini Maharshi wrote a commentary on the Yajnam side of the Vedam, which is called Mimamsa Sutra, or it's also called Karma Sutra. Karma Sutram. Other one is called Vedanta Sutram or Brahma Sutram. Another name for that is Jnana Sutram. Jnana Sutram. And similarly, on Upasana Kandam or Bhakti Kandam, Narada Maharshi wrote Bhakti Sutra. You know that book, famous book, Narada Maharshi's book. So, all this is in the Sutram form. Means very codified and very limited words used what they want to say, and it requires explanations and detailed commentaries on that to understand. They've got commentaries on that on which they have others have written commentary on the commentary. In this way, this knowledge was maintained, right? So similarly, we perform ritual sacrifices. We have to do all that. Demigods don't have to. They don't need it, right? And we have this sacred thread and recitation of the Vedam, etc. And they are not, demigods don't have all that. They don't have the sacred thread, they don't have the recitation of the Vedam either. They say that they are not eligible for that. Eligible in the sense that they don't need it, right? So therefore, they are exempted from that. And he is saying that Vedavyasa Maharshi writes about these things. It is Vedavyasa Maharshi who writes all these things, right? And they, without all these, they are happy. Who? Demigods. They enjoy happiness. Without studying the Vedam and without all these rituals and sacrifices, they enjoy happiness. That's their special status given to them. So, Vedavyasa Maharshi, in his commentary on the in the Vedanta Sutram called Uttara Mimamsa, it is called Uttara Mimamsa, he discusses all these things. These things are discussed, right? He says, say for example, for us there is meditation, dhyanam. It is not required for them. We perform rituals, they don't need any rituals. And we perform studying the Vedam, they don't study any Vedam. So they are a completely different species, these demigods. So different from us in many ways. They have knowledge from the birth itself, and they are always happy. Happy chappy, they are. we, how are we? Shoga moha bhayavaha. Always, isn't it? The shokam, moham, bhayam, lamentation, fear, and illusion is in us, not in everybody, human species. It is one of the nature of the human, always in anxiety, always fearful, always lamenting about what happened, always in illusion. This is all, that's what Bhagavatam says very clearly, that, isn't it? Shokam, moham, bhayavaha, that's our nature, always like that. Whereas demigods are not like that. They are not like us. They are not in anxiety about anything. They are not in illusion, because they have the knowledge by birth, and they don't lament about anything either. Now, the difference between us and the demigods is like between us and insects. Yeah? Between us and insects. You know that difference, isn't it? Right? And among these demigods also, there is so many categories there also. You will see in the Bhagavatam all the names mentioned. Kinnaras, Kimpurushas, Yakshas, Siddhas, Charanas, Vidyadharas. They are all the different categories of demigods. You saw when Narasimhamurti appeared, they all have their prayers to Narasimham, isn't it? And you start asking, where is all these people coming from? Because you never heard about them before, haven't they? Where do they live? Yakshas, Kinnaras, Charanas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, Kimpurushas and all that, right? So, that is why all these combined together is this, you remember, we say, how many crores? 33 crores. Yeah. Or 330 million demigods exist, right? And this 330 million includes all these different categories of demigods, right? Right? There is only, some people say that there is only one God. He has been, we have got 33 crores gods. They say like that, isn't it? That's one of the big complaints about the Vedic tradition. That you've got so many gods, there's only one God. So they hold on to that. And this shows that the limitations of this modern religions, how far they understand things. Rishis does not want to go in that route. This one God and one business and all that. No, they have a higher understanding of these things because you get to know these things better when you start seeing their statements and their understanding of life, how they have presented to us. Right? So, so these gods, like Vidyadharas, Charanas, like you know that what happened was that Chitraketu became Vidyadhara. So, the Vidyadharas were going to see Lord Shiva in Kailas. And Chitraketu said, I also want to come with you, he said. But he was new there, new recruit, bhakta he was. So they won't let him. They told him, you stay back. You are new. If you go there, you may get into trouble there. Because when you go to Kailasam, how you meet Lord Shiva there? And they could anticipate that he will misunderstand everything there. But he said to them, I am also like you, what's it? He put his foot down and told them that I have to come with you. So they took him. And you know what happened after that? Upset Sri Parvati and he had to become Ritrasura because of that. The result of that. That is in the sixth canto. You can read all that, right? That story, what happened there. So what it is showing to us is that there are three powers in all of us. What is that? Ichha Shakti, Jnana Shakti, Kriya Shakti. Three things. You will see in the Bhagavatam spoken very nicely that things in creation time. Right? That is the power of creation, action and knowledge. These three things diminishes from the demigods to the lower species. Ichha Shakti, Jnana Shakti, Kriya Shakti. They are on the highest level in the demigods. It gets less into the humans. And by the time it gets to humans, it gets changed at different levels. Vidyadharas, Chandranas, Kinnaras, Gandharvas and all of them, they have different abilities in these three power. Ichha Shakti, Jnana Shakti, Kriya Shakti, which is called as the knowledge, desire and action. Knowledge is Jnana Shakti. Desire is the Ichha Shakti. And action is the Kriya Shakti. These three power is controlled in creation from the highest living entities to the lower living entities. When it comes to, and that will vary from one species to another species. For example, we human beings, we don't have the strength of an elephant or a lion, isn't it? So, that power is higher in them. And at the same time, we cannot build the nests like the way birds do it. We can't do that, can we? Like the way the birds make their nests. You'll always notice when the season comes, they make the house and they set it up in such a way, they have all their life there for a few months and then they leave the nest and go. Temporarily they build it, isn't it? You see that all the time in the villages, you see this, how they build their nests. Temporarily they can build it and that's enough for them. Timeshare like thing. They build it, they live there and they go. After that they leave it. And then you have to get rid of everything after that. They leave it to you to take care of that. So that power, that we cannot do that like the way they do it and they are, the way they are living in their nest. Similarly, honeycomb, how the honeybees, they make the honeycomb. We can't build that. They can build it, right? So these are instances of the power in action. Power, different power that has been given to us, right? So, and this power we possess also to a very much lesser degree than the animals and the birds. This kind of power, we possess it less than them. You can see for us to live, how much effort we have to put on to build a house, is it not? Sometimes, when you think about it, the whole life you have worked to build a house, to pay for the mortgage. The whole life you have worked for that. And they say it should be starting at 25. By the time you leave the job, this is all what you have done in your life. What was that doing? Paying the mortgage. So, whereas the bird comes at the season, and he builds his nest in few days' time, and he lives there, and he goes. So who has the better deal? They got the better deal than us, is it not? They have that power given to them to be like that, right? So the power of action you find in them more than us in many ways. Similarly, like tiger and elephant, they have much more power of action than us, right? Sometimes when you look at some of these videos on the YouTube, like these wild elephants attacking and all that, you know, people, how they come, and how people go in the motorcycle, stops there, and then you see he's coming, you turn the whole thing around, runs away from there. When you watch that, you see how frightened we are when you face to face a wild elephant, when you have to face. And like that, there's so many interesting things. But but the power of knowledge is greater in us compared to them. Power of action, they have got more. But power of knowledge is more in us, right? So, with the demigods, both these powers are much more than with us. Much more than with us, right? So, why did we say all these things? To talk about Brahmarakshasa. What it is, isn't it? What does Brahmarakshasa mean? What is Brahmarakshasa? Brahmarakshasa means that among the Rakshasas, they belong to. They are Rakshasas. Brahmarakshasa is Rakshasas they are, right? Say a person has studied the Vedam very well, right? But he died prematurely and he will remain as a ghost. But he will remember the Vedam. You have become a ghost, but you remember the Vedam. You have studied Vedam, but you died prematurely. And you have become a ghost, but you remember the Vedam. And they are called Brahmarakshasa. If you go into villages in India, still you will see the temples for them. And we go there and look at them and think, what are these all about? And then we don't understand anything, what Brahmarakshasa is. And this Brahmarakshasa is capable of giving trouble if they are not properly installed and worshipped. Because they are travelling in their ghostly body, right? They haven't got a gross body. And they are in this ghostly body. And at the same time, the Vedic knowledge is there in them. They have studied the Vedam, right? So, this Brahmarakshasa, what we call as Brahmarakshasa, right, belongs to this, one of these created beings. So that is why Patanjali said that you will become a Brahmarakshasa if you go away when I am teaching them, right? Paranjali said this to them, right? And he started teaching them grammar. Vyakaranam. Vyakaranam is grammar. We call in English grammar because that's the only way close to that. Vyakaranam is more than that. It's not just grammar only. So what happened was that he started teaching. One of the students, he got a doubt in his mind, who was learning this, right? So he is thinking that how is he teaching all of us at the same time, right? So he lifted the screen and looked who is teaching us from behind the screen, right? So he, because of the poisonous air from Adishesha, all of them burnt into ashes. Because this child lifted the screen and looked, and the poisonous air from Adishesha burned all of them into ashes, right? So out of the 1,000 students, one has gone out at the middle of this, even though he was told all these things. He was very dull-headed, that child. So he went out. But 999 got burned into ashes. Only the one who survived was the one who went out. Now if you say all these things today to people, they will think, whoa, they can't understand this Vedic tradition. Most of them don't understand this. When they read all these things, they think somebody must have made up all these things, stories. This is what they think. What can you do? That is why Vedic tradition is so different, right? Now, it's so different in the sense, it takes you to understand that this creation is not all what we see and what we talk about it through our eyes, right? There's a lot more subtle things going on here. And the rishis had that understanding, and they had developed this knowledge from their meditations and from their realizations, and they taught us a lot of things which modern world won't have any idea about it. That is the reality, right? So this student did this. He was very dull-headed child. He couldn't take all these things too much for him, so he just walked out, right? And he thought, I'll go out for some time and come back later. He wanted some time out. Yeah, right? So when Adishesha saw this, right, he changed his form and became Patanjali again. He changed his Adishesha form and became Patanjali, right? And he was very sorry that this has happened. All the children were gone into ashes. They become ashes, right? So, at that time, the child who left, he comes back. So, Patanjali thought, at least one survived. And he felt compassion for him, for this child who had come back, right? So, and he was sweating. He was frightened, what's going to happen to me? All others have gone, thinking like that. So, but Patanjali was happy. At least one has come back. He thought, one has survived, isn't it? So, so Patanjali thought that there is no time now to teach this person everything. That he decided that I will give all my mercy to this child. He was so powerful, wasn't it? Adishesha himself. So you can imagine how powerful he was. So he told him that you will get to know all that I know. He told him, this child who was there, right? But you have gone out without my permission. Therefore, you have to take the form of a Brahmarakshasa. But you will have all the knowledge from me. I'll give you that mercy as well, right? But there is a way you can get out of this, he said. Whatever you have learned from me, if you are able to teach this to a student who is fit to receive this, then you will get released from this curse. This was the blessing he gave it to him. So, this student to whom Patanjali gave this grace, his name is Gaudapada. And it is Gaudapada who got initiated by Sukadeva Goswami. This is the history. It's interesting if you look back into all these things. Gaudapada's disciple is Govinda Bhagavatpada, who was staying in Narmada River bank. And he initiated Shankaracharya. So this is how that tradition goes. Now, Gaudapada, who got initiated by Sukadeva Goswami, is direct disciple of Shuka Brahmarshi. Narayanam, first begins with Narayanam. Brahma, Vasishta, Shakti, Parashara, Vedavyas, Sukadeva Goswami. This is the parampara like that. And this parampara is not 500 years old. This goes way back, long, long ago. And right up to Shuka Brahmarshi, it is father to son. Narayana's son is Brahma, Lord Brahma. His son is Vasishta. His son is Shakti. His son is Parashara. His son is Vedavyas. His son is Shuka Brahmarshi. So from Shuka Brahmarshi to Gaudapada, that is where the seminal parampara has broken. It was then direct instruction. So this Gaudapada has a strong relationship with Sri Shuka Brahmarshi, and Gaudapada has written many, many books. Gaudapada Karika is famous on the Brihadaranyam Upanishads. So there is a higher level of personalities like that, right? So this Gaudapada, he belonged to Gauda country, which is Bengal. Now, you know that in the modern, this Aryan invasion theory, you heard about that, haven't you? Yeah, this is what the modern historians are saying, that nobody lived in India before, they all came from somewhere else. This is all bogus, completely bogus it is, because if you study our Shastram, we don't have that concept anywhere. There's only people who lived in Bharatavarsham before, they lived all this time. And how they divided the country was that they have the two sections, Dravidam and Gauda. Now, what happened was, due to politics and all other things, it developed in a different way. But if you look at the divisions in the Shastra, Prabhupada mentions this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. If you want, you can read it there. What he's saying there, it's also the same thing, that five Gauda sections, which is the Saraswatam, Kanyakubjam, Gauda, Utkara and Maithilam. Five sections. They are called Pancha Gaudas. And the Kanyakubjas are the Punjab. Punjab is Kanyakubjam. The Gaudas are in Bengal. Utkalas are in the Orissa. And the Maithilas are in Nepal and Bihar. Right? So these are the five Gauda sections. And the importance is given to Bengal in that, because of the Gauda Desham. It's important. That's why they are common. All these five areas are combined together and called Pancha Gaudas. And Bengal is the Gauda Desham, right? The principal section of that, which is called Gauda. Similarly, the five Dravida sections, they include Dravidam is Andhra, Karnataka, Maharashtra, Gujarat and Dravidam. These are the five Dravida sections. Out of that, the principal section is Dravidam. This is how. Pancha Gaudam and Pancha Dravidam. Prabhupada gave these two names to two sannyasis also. They are all gone now. They are not there. But he gave these names to Pancha Dravida Swami and Pancha Gauda Swami. They were both there, but they were not. They were all gone. So this is how it was divided. Maharashtra, Gujarat, Karnataka, Andhra and Dravida. Kerala didn't exist then. Kerala is a new thing. It was 1956 only Kerala was born. But before that, it is a part of the Tamil Nadu, which is Dravidam. So Dravidam is the principal country in the Pancha Dravidam, and Gauda is the principal state in the Pancha Gauda. That is how it was divided in that, in them days, right? So the one who escaped death from this turning into ashes, right, he became a Brahmarakshas, right? Then he began flying in the air. Who this Brahmarakshas, right? So, every day he will eat one Brahmin. This Brahmarakshas will eat one Brahmin, right? Because he will take some form and he will drag somebody from somewhere who are skilled in reciting the Vedam to a distance, and he will put questions to them and ask them, and if he doesn't answer, he will beat them to death. This Brahmarakshas will do that, right? So, so this one student who escaped was dull, who came from Gouda area, right? Intelligent and dull-headed boys are everywhere. In every areas you will find. that's unavoidable. That's the way it is, right? So Gouda, who came from the who can become a Brahmarakshas, right? He went into the banks of River Narmada, and he sat there on an old fig tree. He was sitting there, and that place is between the five Gouda countries and the five Dravida countries. The five Dravida regions and the five Gouda regions. There was a fig tree there. He was sitting on that, right? So, anyone who comes from north to south, he will normally pass through, because them days there was no roads or anything, only walking roads. People will walk through the different roads. So they knew that, right? He had to pass through that place, right? So, the scholars were moving from north to south and south to north to study different Vedam. Because them days, people had this serious interest in life to realize the self, and Vedic knowledge was very prevalent everywhere. So, they will take full advantage of that. Economic development was not important for them. Self-realization mattered more. That's what I was saying. We are practically in a very unfortunate situation, that just to live in this world, so much energy we have to put it on to survive here, to maintain this body. It wasn't like that. There were people who had so much dedication in cultivating knowledge and realization like that. So he comes there, and Gouda will catch them who are traveling through that route, and he will put questions to them. And if he finds it difficult, they will find it difficult to answer. So he is in the form of a Brahmarakshas. He will eat them. This is a Brahmarakshas life. Yeah. Right. So there was a lot of these things happened. And so because he knew this Panini Sutram, which Patanjali has taught him. So imagine if Patanjali has taught all these things, and Patanjali is commentary on the Panini Sutram. So how intelligent Panini should be to write that? Panini wrote the Sutram. Patanjali wrote his commentary, Mahabhashyam it's called, on the commentary on that. And that Patanjali has taught this Gouda child. And if he will put questions on Panini Sutram to the people who are coming, and if they don't answer, he will eat them. One person told me like this. He said, I like the cows so much that I eat them, he says. Now what are you supposed to say to him? I love them so much that I eat them. He says, so what do you answer? So the same situation like this, that one day a very nice looking Brahmin boy was coming from Kashmir. He was passing through, right? He heard that Chidambaram, this is being taught, Patanjali is teaching this Mahabhashyam of Panini. And he was going there to learn. From Kashmir he was walking all the way to Chidambaram to learn this, right? So, when he was a very good looking boy, a nice, so this Brahmarakshas was very happy seeing the form of the his food, the way it was coming that way, right? He thought, what a beautiful form. Today I have obtained a delicious meal, he thought, seeing that person, right? And so these Brahmarishis can change the form. So he changed his form like a Brahmin and stood before him, and he started asking the usual questions to this one, right? And he says, you seem to know things, he said, because he was answering everything, right? So therefore, he was very pleased with this student whom he got now, this Gauda, right? He said, whatever knowledge my teacher has taught me, I will teach you that, he said. Because, sit down here. The boy said, I am going to Chidambaram to learn this from him. Grammar from Patanjali, he said. So Gauda said, the Chidambaram story is all over. He said, it's all finished. So 999 has gone, and the one left is me. And if you want to learn from me, you can learn it. But forget about Chidambaram. That story is over, he said. Right? So, what you are going to learn at Chidambaram, I can teach you here, he says to him. And this Mahabhashyam is with me. Sit down there, here, he said. So he told this boy from Kashmir. He sits there, right? And he told him also, you should not leave this tree as long as I am teaching you. It's on the top of the tree, the classroom. On the top of the tree it is happening. They are teaching, right? Right. And you should not sleep, he put the condition straight away. You shouldn't sleep at that time. And I will try to complete the teaching as soon as possible, he said. And the boy thought, who had come, that sat, he said, better I learn from him now, because Chidambaram, I'm not going to get it. So I may as well learn from him now. He sat there, right? In them days, there was no ink pen, ink pot, and things like that, right? So, and teacher has told him, you shouldn't leave the tree. You have to sit on the tree. Somebody is teaching you for hours and hours, and if you have to learn all that without writing it down, it's pretty difficult, is it not? Even though he is very intelligent, right? So, what he did, he can't leave the tree also. So, he made a cut in on his thigh, and he used the blood as the ink and started writing on the leaves with that blood. He started writing on the... Whereas our children have got the best everything, isn't it? The ink and the pens, multicolored for sketches, for painting everything. All the pictures. Right. So, so he was doing that. So this Brahmarakshas was teaching him non-stop, day and night. He was teaching him, right? So without food and without sleep, he was learning. And he was making notes of that. And it continued for 9 days, continuously. For 9 days they were teaching, right? And then when it is finished, he tied up all the leaves and he made a bundle out of that, right? And that is how this commentary on Panini Sutram had come, Mahabhashyam. It was all written on the leaves in blood by this student. They obviously knew how to do all these things, right? And this disciple, his name was Chandra Sharma. So, you remember what Patanjali told him? When you find someone, you teach this, you will get released from your Brahmarakshasa form. So, our Gauda got out of it. His problem was solved. Because he has taught Chandra Sharma all these things. So he has got back his human form. He came out of this situation. Right? And then this Chandra Sharma continues his journey. There is a long history after that, all what happened. We will not go so far into that because then everything will be forgotten. So the idea is Vyakarana, that's what we are talking about, isn't it? Grammar. So this grammar, Panini's Vyakaranam or aphorisms or sutras, Brahma Sutram, is so famous, on which Vararuji has written commentary and also Patanjali has written commentary, which is called Mahabhashyam. It's called Mahabhashyam because of its popularity, right? So there is a difference between other Shastram and this grammar, Vyakaranam, right? In the case of all others, they have got, so say for example, if you take Brahma Sutram, right? It has got Shankaracharya's commentary, Ramanuja's commentary, Madhvacharya's commentary, and later on other acharyas, but famous are these three. Commentaries are there, right? So, in the case of Brahma Sutram and all that, sutras are more important than the commentaries. Commentary is called Bhashyam. So, in the case of Brahma Sutram and all that, sutram is more important than the commentary or the Bhashyam. But with the grammar, it's the other way. Commentaries are more important than the sutram. You understand why it is so? Reason for that is, if you read the sutram, you won't get know anything. If you want to apply that in your speech, you have to study the Bhashyam, commentary. So without Bhashyam, you can't even get any idea about the sutram, which is different in the case of Brahma Sutram. In the other sutrams, even if you read Sharirika Bhashyam, there is a text, Acharya Swamiji has written that, you will see that he puts a lot of effort to explain Vedavyasa Maharshi's sutram, which shows that sutram is more important than the commentary. Understanding sutram is difficult, but sutram does hold, control everything, and it is very much dependent on the sutram, the commentary. Right? If you look, you get a feel for this. We read through it a little bit. It's translated into English and all that. And even though it's translated, it's still not the same effect it doesn't have. But the scholars know about these things, what happens, right? So commentary is more important in the case of grammar, Vyakaranam, right? So, every shastram has got its own commentary. And different commentaries are there for different sutram, right? And the commentary on the Vyakarana Sutram is called Mahabhashyam. It's called Mahabhashyam. And Mahabhashyam was written by Patanjali. So, this is about grammar, right? So, grammar has grammar, you know how it controls the language, right? But in Sanskrit, grammar is very difficult. Very, very difficult. Properly, you can study Sanskrit. It is not difficult. There are so many courses even now available online and all that. But to know the grammatic rules, it takes long time. Generally, it used to be 12, 14 years. Normally, if you want to have a proper understanding of the grammar. But you can learn Sanskrit in few weeks or few months. Some idea you will get by attending these courses online and all that, right? Right. So, so this grammar, has been for a long period of time, Panini's grammar was the authority. Panini's grammar and Patanjali's Mahabhashyam. That is what was followed throughout the history. You are talking about millions of years going back into history, right? And then, why I'm saying these things is, there is a difference. All these things are there, which is called Vedangam, right? The limbs of Vedam. They're all the limbs of Vedam. Now, when you understand this Vedangam to some extent, and then you try to understand what Vedam is about, right? Because Vedangam controls the Vedam. Shiksha controls, Vyagranam controls, Chandas controls, all these things, right? So, this Vedam, Vyagranam or grammar is called the mouth of the Veda Purusha. Veda Purusha's breathing is Shiksha. Speech or mouth is the Vyagranam. That is how the connection is, right? And then we go into the next one is called Chandasa. It's no point in discussing Vyagranam and all other things because that's not our I don't have the knowledge, nor do I think it is so important to understand all that. Vyagranam, those who are studying Vyagranam can study that. But just to understand what this all means, right? Then this Chandasa is the next one, right? It's considered to be the feet of the Veda Purusha. His feet is Chandasa, right? Krishna mentions here, you see, 39th verse in the Bhagavadam. Chandomayo Amrdamaya Sahasra Padavim Prabhu Ongaral Vedas Prashas Saroshman Ushmandasta Bhushidam. Chandasa. You will find this Chandasa in the Bhagavadam, it is spoken. When Gajendra story, if you read, Chandomayam Edajayarpida Shodasharam, he says, Garuda's wings are considered to be the sound vibration of or Chandasa of the Veda. Garuda is an authority on the Veda, isn't it? So, Garuda's this flapping the wings is considered to be the Chandasa. Symbolically spoken in that way. So, Chandas means the composition, metric composition of the hymns, how they are combined. Right? For example, Rigvedam and Samavedam are all in verses, right? And all in verses form, hymns form. Whereas Yajurvedam has mantras in prose form. Like you have the fifth canto, a lot of it is in the prose form, isn't it? In the fifth canto. In that way, right? And Vedam mostly is in the form of chandas, but that is how it is called, chandas, right? So, what it means is that, like a tailor, take the cloth and cuts it to suit our, some people are fat, some people are slim. So, accordingly, you have to cut the cloth, isn't it, to make the dress. In the same way, it is Vedam, Vedic hymns and Vedic prose is created like that. Some of the good things we don't even relish it. For example, in Srimad Bhagavatam, you know that in the fifth canto, that prose thing, yeah, Bharadrahuvana Samadham and before that, about the Jambudivam and all, explained there. If you hear from a person who has studied Vedam, and when he reads that, you will understand the difference. You won't know it otherwise. Because he is used to that chandas correctly. He can read it properly. The prose things particularly. So that's where we will get to know these things. Otherwise you won't know it. We will read in a way whatever suits us. We have to accept it that way. But those who know Chandasa, they will read it properly, without mistakes. Right? So, feet of the Veda Purusha is this Chandasa. It is his feet. It's his feet. Right? So, you know how that is? Because, to understand this, then those who are chanting mantra japam, right? Gayatri, for example, if you take, right? Do you know how they chant, right? For example, when they chant Gayatri, they touch their head at a particular time, head their chest at a particular time, head the limbs at different times. What does that mean? They're actually respecting the deities at those places, right? For example, when you say a mantra, every mantra is connected to a rishi. There will be a rishi behind it. Like for Gayatri Mantra, it's normally Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra Krishi, Anushtup Chandrashri, Mahavishnu Devada. You will see this in the Vishnu Sahasranama, in the beginning spoken, right? So, when the Chandas is mentioned, right, they mention, they will touch the, at that moment, the feet of the, that is their, the feet they touch and put it on their head as a mark of respect to the Veda Purusha's lotus feet they are touching. Vedam in the form of a person and these lotus feet you are touching at that time while chanting that thing. Right? And when they touch the heart when the name of the Devada is spoken. If you look into the Vishnu Sahasranam in the beginning you will see these things. Mahavishnu Paramatma, Sriman Narayano Devada. You will see all that. So when you say Sriman Narayano Devada, you touch the heart. Right? So all the Veda mantras in the form of poetry are chandas. They are called chandas. Right? And those mantras which are not part of the Vedas are called shlokas. Like in the Bhagavatam, it's all shlokam. Is it not? Bhagavatam is all shlokam. Why I am saying this is, Bhagavatam, if you read the Moolam verses, in Kashmir or in South, Moolam is the same, but the way you read is different. The meter and everything. But that doesn't happen to the Vedam. To Bhagavatam it happens, but it doesn't happen to the Vedam. Again, to stress the importance, how much care they have taken to look after Vedam. They were not so particular about Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam, you can read, there is so many different ways of reading Srimad Bhagavatam. Very learned people among themselves, if you look, you will see it's read in one way in one place, another way in another place, the meter and the way they recite the verses, right? So, shlokam, you are allowed to do that. But on chandas, you are not. Vedam is all chandas. Bhagavatam and all other Puranams is all verses. We call it verses, isn't it? Shlokam is verses, right? So, prose is called gadyam and chandas is called padyam in Sanskrit. In Sanskrit, right? In English it's called poetry. Right? So Vedic poetry, you can say, more or less, is called chandas. But chandas also refers to the meter or rhyme of any poetic expression, which are in a rhythmic way. Right? Of this, what is mentioned here, you will see. Anushtupa, he is saying here, you see. Gayatri, Ushni, Ushni, Anushtupa, Brihadi, Pankti, Trishtupa, Jagadi, Atyashti, Adijagadi, Adivirat. These are all different types of chandas Krishna is referring to in the Bhagavatam. They are all the different types of chandas spoken in the Bhagavatam. Krishna is referring. They are all chandas. Chandas means, as I said before, it is the meter or rhyme of any poetic expression which are all rhythmic. All of them are rhythmic, right? So, Ushnika, prior to that, Gayatri also. Gayatri has got 24 letters. 24 letters, right? And 4 letters more than that is Ushnika. And then 4 letters more than that is Anushtupa. And 4 letters more than that is Brihadi. And 4 letters more is Pankti. And 4 more Trishtup. And 4 more Jagadi. And 4 more Atyashti. And 4 more Adijagadi and 4 more Adivirat. So, this is how this chandas is formed, and they are called by these different names, right? So, Chandomayam, Prahlada says in the Prahlada Sutta, if you look, you will find this. Chandomayam yadajayarpida shodasharam samsara chakra adi samsara chakra muja adi goji dare tudanya. There is a verse in the Prahlada Sutta you will find. Chandomayam, talking about Vedam. Prahlada is saying this. So, now you know what that means, isn't it? Chandasa means. Chandasa means the feet of the Vedam, Veda Purusha's feet, which is actually the meter or the poetry of the flow of the letters in the form of verses, or like what you say, this Gayatri is a Chandas, and similarly all other names, they all have got number of letters will vary, and according these different names are given. Then after that we have got Niruktam. I'm just saying what these things are before we go into details. Niruktam means Veda Purusha's ears, hearing of the Veda Purusha, right? This indicating actually the precise meaning of rare and uncommon words in Vedas. Vedas have got a lot of words which are not in any language. Even ordinary Sanskrit, if you study, you won't understand those words in the Veda. It's tough. They're not available in any languages, or even in Sanskrit also. Ordinary Sanskrit, if you study, you won't know the Veda properly. Veda has got such words in them. And it is not possible to understand them unless you study Niruktam. That's where Niruktam helps. There are so many expressions in the Veda where this is the beauty of that Vedic hymns, that how much care the rishis have taken so that nobody will tamper with it later on. You won't, fortunately nobody has edited it so far. You see, this is the fault of also, it's no point us fighting about it, that we have edited Prabhupada's books. There's a fight going on about it all the time, isn't it? This is not the original version. The main problem there is because it is not in the same way Vedam is written. That's why you are able to edit it. If it was written like the Vedam, you couldn't have touched it. Nobody could have touched it. That's how it survived all these years. Not 1 year, 2 years. You're talking about from creation onwards. Vedam was not spoken only in this day of Lord Brahma. It coming from the last kalpam of Lord Brahma. So that means how long it has survived. And you have to see the power behind that, that it stayed like this in kalpam after kalpam, it stayed like this. We are not talking about one yugam after yugam. One kalpam after kalpam, it has stayed like this. So how powerful it has to be. Unedited, it stayed. Try to see these things in the Shastram, and then only you can appreciate what we are talking about. That we are fighting over editing so much. Oh, you edited this, and therefore 1972 editions, people should buy. Don't buy the 1980 edition, it's all edited and all that. The main problem is this, that because it's written in English, that you are able to edit. But if it was written in the language of the Vedam, nobody would have touched it. Nobody could touch it. Because what will happen is, the moment you touch it, those who know about it will notice it. They will reject completely the whole thing. That person won't be accepted and be rejected completely. That was it. It's always been like that. Even today it is like that. Among the scholars of the Vedams, they know that whether it is original or not. Because it was not in the books, first of all. It always stayed in their memory. They kept it like that. Right. So, so this Niruktam, what does is, Niruktam gives you an access to understand those difficult part in the Vedam for which you have no other way of knowing. That's why it's called Niruktam. What cannot be understood by any other means. So there are rishis who have written the Niruktam books to understand the Vedam. They are well known for that, right? So, it says here that the Nirukta traces its origin of each word and gives its meaning. Like the words which are in the Vedam, which you cannot understand, where those words have come from, you require explanation for that and its meaning. It is Niruktam what was originally existing in the Shastram. But later on, in the modern languages, when they have developed, you know, there is a department called philology. I don't know whether you have heard that. Philology, they call it. Philology is like this Niruktam. similar to that, right? So, the science of the languages, it's called, right? So, all modern languages owes its birth to Sanskrit. All modern languages. Either to for grammar from the Vyakaranam and Niruktam for the words. That's how all other languages have come about later. Now, in the modern days, people say different things about different countries, for example, how much Vedic knowledge was prevalent everywhere before. Prabhupada said in one instance, he was very particular about going to Russia. Right? Prabhupada was very particular about going to Russia. At that time, it was very difficult to go to Russia. At the time when Prabhupada was here, it was not open. And Russia was very closed at that moment. So some devotees asked him, why you are so insisting going to Russia? First of all, they are giving you trouble. And they don't let you in easily. So out of the, you know, the political situation was like that, isn't it? Cold War was going on. You are talking about the early 70s then. Cold War was going on. And they won't open up. And they were suspicious about everything from the West. What was coming from the West. The Russians were very suspicious about it. And this between KGB and CIA, they were having a lot of this was growing on at that time. Prabhupada said, no, it's not like that, he said. It is a land of the rishis, he said. Many, many rishis, they lived in Russia because they found the weather in Russia, so cold, good for their austerities. And they chose Russia for that. Many people went and being... Because what does the rishis want? They want solitude, isn't it? They don't want interference from too much from outside. So apparently he says the word rishis have turned into Russia. That's how this word Russia has come, according to Prabhupada's statement that is. That, and he insisted that there are devotees there. They will take to Krishna consciousness. He said, so I should go. And he insisted that. So in spite of all the problems what he had to face, he couldn't get anything to eat. Rice was not available and dal was not available. You'll know all that. It's in the Leelamrita and all spoken. How to find a shop where they could buy some dal. They were struggling. And particularly they were in great difficulty at that time. Things may have changed now, but it's different. But and then it happens in history all the time. So these things shows that. And similarly, California, I mentioned before, it's a place where Kapila Maharshi performed his penance and meditations. Ash Island and Horse Island, next to that's mentioned in the third canto as the place where the ashes, they got burned into ashes there. That's how they have committed. So, this is all we are talking about, not in the 2000 BC or 5000 BC. Way, way, way back before that all these things happened. But that history is unknown to us now. Only by the mercy of such Mahatmas who have deeper knowledge of the Vedam, they will know these things, that this knowledge was everywhere. This knowledge was all over the world at one time. Gradually, it got people left this tradition and moved away from that. And new religions have come up and became separated like that. That's how it happened. Originally, it was everywhere. And any part of the world, like Ramayana, if you read the stories related to Ravana making the tunnel to South America and all that, there's all kinds of things spoken like that. And they had that power to do so in them days. Through their yoga power, they could do a lot of things like that. So anyway, Niruktam means this, that to understand the Vedic terminology, many things what we will not understand normally, with the help of Niruktam, you can understand that. So that is what Niruktam is all about. And some rishis have written commentary about that. Now, we come to the most interesting part of the Vedangam, Jyotisham. Everybody loves Jyotisham. isn't it? Because even if you don't know the other five, this one everybody knows. Because sometime in life, all of us would have thought about going to one astrologer. Would we not? We do. That's natural in us. Why shouldn't I try out what's going to be my future? We'd like to know. So, rarely people you find, in some form of astrology is there all over the world. Is it not? You will see in India it is so much that there is so many channels every day giving your every daily forecast and the weekly forecast and the monthly forecast and the yearly forecast and for the whole life forecast. It's going on channel after channel after channel, you can see. And then they've got all the other things like gemology, you know, with the gems and various things like that, palm and yeah, all kinds of things. Yeah, so many, all kinds of things are going on all channels, right? So where did all this come from? How did this all originate from? That's the important thing to know. So Jyotisham is the beginner of all the whole thing, right? Jyotisham is considered to be the eye of the Veda Purusha. Veda Purusha's eye is Jyotisham. You see, a lot of things in this world, what will happen, is already decided. If you had the proper vision to see it and the knowledge, you can know it also. And that is Jyotisham, actually. Because many things are already decided what's going to happen. What's going to happen to this world in another 50 years' time, 100 years' time, is all known. It's not that it's just happening by chance. But we don't have the knowledge or the vision to see that. That is our situation. Jyotisham is for that. Able to see things, what will happen in the future. Right? So that is why it's called the eyes. Eyes of the Veda Purusha. Right? So, and you know that who are the rishis connected with? Garga Maharshi, top person. On the Hora Shastram is his, who initiated Krishna. He is the authority, Hora Shastram. And you will see when we go to Garga Bhagavatam, we'll talk about it at that time. Garga Maharshi is saying this, that I knew these things will happen in the future. No other Maharshi knew this. He knew that this is what's going to happen. And similarly, Srinarada Maharshi also, and also Vedavyasa Maharshi's father, Parashara Maharshi. They were all experts on these things. Right? And they have all written books on Jyotisham. So we shouldn't write it off thinking that what's happening in the modern world is another story. That's more like a business it is, isn't it? People exploit each other and cheat each other also on that. That's another thing. But Vedic Shastram of Jyotisham is not wrong. Only rishis had the proper knowledge and they have also they had qualified people. They were, otherwise, how could those Brahmanas say to Yudhishthira about Parikshit's future? So precisely they told him, did they not? They told him he will be cursed by a Brahmana and he'll die out of bitten by Takshaka. When he was born, this was told. How could he say that unless they knew Jyotisham well? Impossible, is it not? So you can understand that the science of Jyotisham is not at fault. The problem is that we don't have the Brahmanas who have that knowledge today in the Jyotisham. That's where the problem is, right? So, similarly, you may have read, I don't know whether if you are close follower of Ishkon's problems in Sampradayasan, you will find this, that Prabhupada's spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, he has studied what is called the Surya Siddhantam. Remember Surya Siddhanta? You may have heard about that. And he was a master at it. He was very much into it, studying the Surya Siddhanta. There were many other scholars as well on Surya Siddhanta, right? So, where this Surya Siddhanta comes from? Surya Siddhanta is like that. The sun god, that he took up one section of this Jyotisham science, right? On Jyotisham, these rishis have written different commentaries, right? The sun god has taken up a part of that and he taught this to Mayasura. He taught this to Mayasura. You know this Mayasura, who he is, isn't it? Mayasura is in the 7th canto. If you study, you will see him there. Tribhura Dahanam happened. Lord Shiva killing Tribhurandaka, he was called. At that time, Mayasura tries to bewilder Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva was finding it difficult to deal with Maya. Because he was a master in playing with Maya. And he could create things which you couldn't even imagine. Such power he has acquired, Maya. So this Maya, he was a divine architect and builder, he's called. Divine architect and builder. So you may think, is there a divine one architect and builder? There is one, yeah. That is Mayasura, right? Like Vishwakarma for the demigods, Maya for the demons. Vishwakarma built Dwaraka, they say, isn't it? Maya built many places, you will see Maya's name mentioned. Yeah, Tribhurandaka is called because he has to deal with Maya. Maya lost at the end with Lord Shiva in that fight in the 7th canto. If you study at the end, you will find Tribhura Dahanam, it's called, where Lord Shiva acquiring unusual powers. 3 aeroplanes he built with iron, copper and gold, or iron, silver and gold, I can't remember. 3 different materials, 3 different aeroplanes, and he fights with them. And he wins the war with Maya, right? So that story is in the 7th canto. You can read that. So this Maya learned this, and that is called the Surya Siddhanta. So naturally people were interested in studying Surya Siddhanta. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati spent a long time studying Surya Siddhanta. Finally he gave it up. He thought, what does it point? But he was very much attracted by it in a major part of his life. And because he was so attracted by Surya Siddhanta, he became very good at it in Surya Siddhanta. But later on, when he realized that spiritual life and bhakti has more attraction for him, he changed everything and gave up Surya Siddhanta and all that. But there are, if you look into the old harmonist, you will find he wrote articles about Surya Siddhanta in the olden days, when he was in the initial days of his preaching mission, right? So, now, how does Jyotisham work? That's what we are interested, is it not? How does Jyotisham work, right? The planetary position, the different planets in the sky, right? It can be determined without resorting to Jyotisham. You can, through the telescopes and all other power they have got, you know, with the huge telescopes they have built, they can determine the position of the planets at the moment, isn't it? But say the position of these planets, say 50 years from now, what they will be, they can't say. Do you understand? Today what it is, they can say that with the help of this telescope. But say 50 years from now, where these planets will be, they can't say that. We'll tell you when we get to see that at that time. Right? So, but with Jyotisham you can. Jyotisham, you can. So this is the principle when they write this horoscope. That they are seeing your position of the planets at the time of your birth. That's why they ask for the time of birth. These are the very basic things in Jyotisham, right? They ask you for the time of birth, you give them the time of birth. Keeping that, they know the position of the planets right now, what it is. And then they calculate for 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, what it will be. And each time when they calculate, they know what the situation of the planets and what's your situation at that time. That's how they forecast and complete the horoscope in that way, right? So, say for example, color. color of any particular object, right? By touching that, you won't know the color. You need the eye, isn't it? Only with the help of eye, you can notice the color. By touching, you won't know the color, isn't it? Similarly, in these millions of planets in the sky, right? You have seen a planet, for example, right? But its effects on us, based on its location and how it affects us, how would you know that? Only Jyotisham can tell us that. Do you know what I'm saying? That means, every time we are finding out new planets, isn't it? Sometimes you see in the paper, they say, oh, we have found a new planet today. The scientists come up with something like that. And so many planets we have found out, but there are many more planets which we have not seen. We have not recognized them, where they are, what they are. Because there's millions of them there. How will you... We don't have a complete data of all these things. And even if you have a data, that data is at the time when it is drawn, that's what it shows. It doesn't tell you what it happens after 10 years. So all these photographs, what you have from the Google, or who's doing that, I don't know, the one who does all these things, mapping them. What he is showing to us at the time when it was drawn, the photos, what has been taken by the telescopes and all that, that's what it's giving you. It doesn't tell you anything more than that. So, but if you have sighted a new planet, what is its impact on us? Jyotisham can tell you that, right? That is why it is called the eye of the Veda Purusha, right? Then, what else? Right? When you are performing Vedic rituals, right, yagam and all that, you know how much calculation is done before deciding the time of that, right? And it is all referred to the planetary positions, right? Just like, not anymore now, but traditionally, the dates of marriage and all that, they were looking at it, the astrology behind it, right? They are fixed when the planetary positions are favorable, the marriages. So, not anymore, but nowadays it is, best day is Sunday, because we don't have to go to work. That's consideration today, isn't it? That's how these days it is. Everything, Sunday, marriages, spiritual life, visiting the temples, and all this was Sunday. Monday to Friday, work, Saturday shopping. So it all falls in place properly. It has become like that, the life. Life has become like that. So here, the point is this, that Vedam had no this weekend business and all that in their time. For them, the whole week is important. In this whole week or month, what is the most appropriate time, auspicious time for marriages? They were able to say based on the Jyotisham, right? So a blind person has to be led by someone in the right path, right? So, for us, we've got the eyes, we can see the things, but for performing Vedic ceremonies and all that, Jyotisham plays an important role in deciding the time and the place of sacrifices. We may not know this. Rajasuyam was performed, right? If you study about Rajasuyam and Mahabharatam, it says how many days astrologers took to decide the time to start the Rajasuyam. How much discussion happened before that? Similarly, all these big sacrifices, Prithus, sacrifices, and similarly Mahabali sacrifices, they were not decided just like the way we decide our Olympics every 4 years or every 8 years. No, it's not decided like that. They had to look at it, so many factors, because they know if it is done at the wrong time, the result won't come from that. Because they knew all these things in such detail, the astrologers are the first people to consult before they start anything. It is their responsibility to fix the date, time, place and everything. So that is why all the kings in the past, great personalities, they will maintain the best astrologers. It is always like that. All royal families, if you see, they all had access to the best astrologers all the time. So it's a different way of life, thinking in life, about life in different way, different understanding. So performing like Ashwamedham and all costs a lot of money. Similarly, Rajasuyam. And similarly, all other Vedic sacrifices cost a lot of money, lot of effort, lot of preparations, and everything. And it cannot be done without proper selection of time and date and everything. So that is why even sometimes you hear this, like sometimes they have this Adhiratram, Agnishtomam, these kind of yagams still happening. They have to get the best astrologers to decide the time and the date, everything. So basically what we have to understand is this, that Jyotisham is the eye of the Vedam. Is the eye of the Vedam. So astronomy and astrology are two different things, isn't it? Astronomy tells you the planetary position at various points of time, and how does this planetary position affects the world. Affects the world, right? How does it affect us? And what is to be done to make it favorable to us? And the science of astrology combined in conjunction with and based on astronomy deals with all these questions. Yeah? So you can see with astronomy you can know the planetary positions, the technical side of that. But interpreting the position of the planets, its effect on us, that is more skill required. That's where things go wrong. You see, position of the planets you can find out with instruments, like the telescope and various other things, whatever they have got, isn't it? The Jodrell Bank Observatory and all that. They can tell you a lot of things about the position. But how to interpret that in relationship with our life in this planet, that is more difficult. And that is what the Garga Maharshi and Srinarada Maharshi and Parashara Maharshi has done. So now you see where Jyotisham coming from in the Vedam. That ability to interpret the position of the planets. Planets don't control our life. Don't misunderstand it that way. They don't control. Karmam controls, Prarabdham controls our life. But our Prarabdha Karmam and the planet's position has a relationship, and they have found out that. That is very good, isn't it? I mean, how do you know all these things? How can you find out that the planetary position has a bearing on our prarabdham? What happens here? So, these are the things, that is why Jyotisham in the Vedam is spoken like this, that when Vedic karmas are performed, under the influence of a particular planet, a star, or a lunar day, in the dark or bright fortnight, Jyotisham was given to help in arriving at the most favorable time for performing this karma. And therefore, it has become made as a part of the Vedam. Because Vedam is full of sacrifices. In order to perform these sacrifices, you need to know this first. And therefore, Jyotisham became a part of the Vedam. It has become the part of the Vedangam. So it's 10 to 20 to 11 now. We'll have a short break. And then, what should we do? We shall have one more hour. Is it okay? After that? We'll have a 20-minute break. And then, till 12, we'll have the class. 11 to 12. And then, we'll have some prasadam after that. Yeah?
Okay. Chedo darpanam arjanam vamahadavagni nirvapanam ശ്രേയക്കൈതവചന്ദ്രിയാ വിതരണം വിദ്യാവധൂ ജീവനം ആനന്ദാംബുദിവർദ്ധനം പ്രതിപദപൂർണാമൃതാസ്വാദനം സർവാത്മാസവനം പരം വിജയതേ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ സങ്കീർത്തനം നാമനാമകാരി ബഹുദാ നിജ സർവശക്തി നതാർപ്പിതാ നിമിതാ സ്മരണേന കാലാം ഏതാദൃശീ തവ കൃപാ ഭഗവൻ മമാപി ദുർദൈവമീദൃശമിഹാ ജനിനാനുരാഗാഹം തൃണാരവീശുനീചേന തരോരവീ സഹിഷ്ണുന അമാനിനാമാനദേന കീർത്തനീയ സദാഹരി നധനം നജനം നസുന്ദരീം കവിതാം വാ ജഗദീശകാമയേ മമ ജന്മനി ജന്മനീശ്വരീ ഭവദാദ് ഭക്തിരഹൈ ദുഗിത്വൈ ഐ നന്ദതനൂജ കിങ്കരം പതിതാമാം ഷമേ ഭവാംബുദൗ കൃപയാ തവ പാദ പങ്കജ സ്ഥിത ധൂളീ സദൃശം വിചിന്തയ നയനം ഗളദശോധാരയ വദനം ഗദ്ഗദ രുദ്ധയാ ഗിര പുളകൈർനിശിതം കഥാവബോ തവ നാമഗ്രഹണേ ഭവിഷ്യതി യുഗായിദം നിമേഷേണ ചക്ഷുഷാ പ്രാവിശായിദം ശൂന്യായിദം ജഗൽസർവം ഗോവിന്ദ വിരഹേ നമേ ആശ്ലിഷ്യ വാ പാദരതാം വിനഷ്ടു മാം അദർശനാം മർമഹദാം കരോതു വാ യഥാ തഥാ വാ വിദദാ ദുലംബനോ മൽപ്രാണനാഥാസ്തു നൈവ നാഥര സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ സോ എമംഗ് ദി വേദാംഗം ദ ലിംസ് ഓഫ് വേദം Vedapurusha's limbs, Vedangam. We have seen Shiksha, we have seen Vyakaranam, we have seen Chandas, Niruktam and Jyotisham. Five. And the last one is called Kalpam. Kalpa Sutram, they are called Kalpam. They are called arms of the Vedapurusha. Vedapurusha's arms, it's called, right? So, Kalpam, Kalpa Sutram, what it does is, it induces one into Vedic action, into Vedic way of life, to make a person, induce one into the Vedic way of life, right? So, after learning Shiksha, Vyakaranam, Chandasa, Niruktam and Jyotisham. You have learned all that. And then, you have to do something to achieve the results from all that. Right? So, say for example, you have to do some good deeds in life to wash off the sins which had occurred as a result of what came to our mind. You see how sensitive they are. Things what you have done by your mind and intelligence, it would have definitely created a lot of problems for ourselves. And you can see that coming back to us. That means, karmam should always be under guidance. It should never be done whimsically. Everything what we do in life is whimsically done, isn't it? Because it suits me, I'll do it. This is the attitude. That shouldn't happen. Therefore, what Vedam did was, it tied us down with what is called kalpam. Kalpa Sutram is for that. That to tie you down, that you don't break the rules and you go out of it and start doing things whimsically. Because if you do that, you will create karma vasana and which will come back in some results, in some form, and you will have to suffer from that. So in order to avoid that, they decide this, that to do this, we must have a mantra, its correct pronunciation and meaning. To do the karma, we must have the necessary material aids. Right? We must have a place, have a house or place to do these things. Then the result of this action should be dedicated to God. Dedicated to the Krishna's happiness. Right? So, kalpa deals with all such matters. Right? For example, one has to recite the Vedas faithfully. Right? And then he has to learn the words without any fault through Shiksha. Then the grammar also should be learned, or Vyakaranam should be learned. Then the meter and the meaning should be known through the Chandasa and Niruktam. And the proper time to perform these rituals to be decided by Jyotisham. So you can see how the Vedangam comes into your own life. How it is done, right? But all these are only to do the jobs mentioned in the Kalpa. Kalpa deals with matters like how should a particular ritual be done? One. Then what functions or karma should be performed by man of each caste or varna in which state of ashrama? This is all relevant at the time when Varnashrama Dharma existed. People rigidly followed these things at that time. All these things have been corrupted, and it has all been spoken in a way as though it has destroyed the whole world. That's the way it's spoken about Varnashrama Dharma, isn't it? But it wasn't like that before. Varnashrama Dharma started with the Lord Buddha's time. That was even before Jesus Christ, right? He was the first one who hit hard on the Vedic way of life, right? On the Vedic traditions. The first person who hit Vedic philosophy was Lord Buddha. So he first rejected Varnashrama. Their problem started. Of course, he had his own reasons to do so, because he had come for particular reasons, specific reasons to destroy our nature of killing innocent animals, for the slaughtering them for sacrifices. All this has become very prominent. So Krishna had to come in that form and do this correction business. That's what Lord Buddha has done. But in that process, a lot of things happened. He didn't just do it only stopping people from killing animals, but it was done in such a way it upset the Varnashrama Dharmam also. It destroyed the faith of the people in the Vedam also. He wouldn't accept Vedam. That was his main difficulty. And that is what he's saying here, that Kalpa deals with these things, that how should a particular ritual be done, and then what function or karma should be performed by man of each caste or varnam, which is Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or in which ashram he should do that. Brahmachari, Grastham, Vanaprastham, Sannyasam. Today it is so mixed up, everything, isn't it? Everything is so messed up completely, right? So, so which ritual involves which mantra, which materials you require for the rituals, and which devata you will worship, which form of the truth you will worship in that particular sacrifice. Devata Sankalpam has come like this. Originally, there was no Devata Sankalpam. Do you understand? From the Vedic point of view, Devata Sankalpam, if you ask many old Brahmana families, they will tell you that we are not from the deity worship background. We are from the Agni background, from the fire worship. That was their worship. Because in the fire, they were burning fire at home for thousands of years, and that's their tradition. This Vigraham, what you call the deity worship, is a new thing. It's not so old. It is in the mention in the third canto, when it is started, why it was started. All these things are there in the third canto. You know that. So, traditionally, in the Vedic times, when Vedam was very strong in people's life, the situation was like this. Which devata should be worshipped is decided for the particular sacrifice, right? And how many priests are required for performing the sacrifice. So that is where this word ritvik comes from, which has come into our movement also in a corrupted form. It's called ritviks. So actually this whole thing is wrong, what we are using. It's wrong. It is for performing those big Vedic sacrifices, who perform that, they are called ritviks, right? And various pots are required, vessels, size of the pots and shape of the pots, all this is important. There's books available if you want to see the types of pots they used, the vessels they've used, the spoons they have used, the stones they have used. All these details are available in the books. You can look at them if you want to see that. I'm trying to understand that. But kalpam is meant for this. How to conduct these sacrifices. How to get it done. Right? So, there are, Kalpashastram has been compiled by a number of sages. And in Krishna Yajurvedam, which is quite prominent in the south part of India, right? There is this six rishis or sages: Abhastambham, Bodhalayanam, Vaighanasam, Satyashadam, Bharadvaja, Agnivaisha have written Kalpasutram. All these rishis have written for Kalpasutram. You will see in this, Vaighanasam is the tradition in Tirupati temple. They follow that. Vaikhana is the tradition. Ramanujacharya was fond of Bodhayanam traditions, Kalpasutra. He had written commentaries on that. Right. So, for the Rigvedam, Rigvedis, wherever more Rigvedis are present, Rigvedam among the Brahmanas, Rigvedic who are follow the Rigvedas, they have Ashulayana Kalpam. Ashulayana Maharshi's Kalpam they study. And there is also Sanghayanam, Kathiyayanam, and of the Shukla Yajurvedam. Yajurvedam has got these two parts, Krishna Yajurvedam and Shukla Yajurvedam, right? And like this, Kalpam basically deals with conducting these sacrifices after you have acquired knowledge of all the other five. All the other five. So, then there is also, Jaimini have also done the Kalpasutram, right? There are two kinds of sutram called Grihya Sutram and Shraudha Sutram, they call it. And these sutrams detail the 40 Vedic rituals to be performed to purify a person for the Brahmana. Normally now it has come down to two, first initiation, second initiation, we say, isn't it? But there is a list in the book, I have seen this, 40 listed there. What is required in a person's life, different samskarams required at different stages. Not after born, before born it starts. Samskaram starts way before the child is born. Before Garbhadhanam it begins. And from then onwards, it goes right up to his cremation, when the body is put into the fire. At that time, the fire is brought from the same fire which he was using for his sacrifices at home. The same fire is brought and set fire to the wood when his body is burned into ashes. Right? So altogether, if you ask correctly how many sacrifices should be there, purificatory processes, they are called. There are actually 40 for one person to do. Precisely, it is that, 40. But then they have discounted a lot of it, saying that it's getting too much. So then it became 16. That's why you will see in Prahlada Stuti it's mentioned 16 for a Brahmana. For 16 it is mentioned. But actually it is 40. But Prahlada says 16 should be there minimum. But now 16 and all gone, there is hardly anything left now. There is a namesake ceremony. And marriage is one of them. Vivaham, right? And similarly, Annaprashanam and Chaulam, Upanayanam, like this it goes, a lot of that. And there is a detailed description of all these things, how to do it. And that is all the books Kalpasutram is all about. Kalpasutram is available for that, right? And then, in everyday life, a Brahmana should perform minimum 21 yajnam in a daily life. Based on the Agnihotram. That means those worship of the Agni. That was the system. 7 Havi Yajnam, 7 Soma Yajnam, and 7 Bhagya Yajnam. They are basically, you know why it is. So that he won't go to factory to work. That was the reason behind it. All these Yajnams are for. Brahmana should be kept 24 hours busy. So he won't go out and work and earn money. He should not do it. And that is why. Therefore, they have the highest discipline. Means they have been tied everywhere. They can't move an inch this way or that way in their life. So, if they had lived like that, they would not experience any suffering in life. Paramacharya says like that. But they are not living like that, and that's why they got into trouble also, because of this. So, Brahmanas have got the maximum rituals to perform. I mentioned before also, they wake up at 2 or 3 in the morning, and the first drop of water they will take is after 1 o'clock. Till then, the whole morning they have things to do. In this way they are tied all through the way. And then they have a couple of hours rest, and then again start the whole afternoon. Afternoon upasana, say from 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock they start and go right up to 10 o'clock in the night. So like this was their life, 24/7, and whole life, a life like this. Imagine that, no weekends, no holidays, nothing. So that is why they had acquired that strength. All for what? For others' benefit. Not for their own benefit. How do they get the benefit? Krishna says in the Bhagavatam. Does not. He says that Vedam, Brahmana who is studying the Vedam and living that life, he said he doesn't need anything. His doors are open there to the spiritual world. He goes back without any difficulty. He will go back. He said, Brahmanasahi dehoyam chudragamaya neshyade. Instead, if he uses his body for sense gratification, he will go to hell. Who says? Krishna says. It is in the Bhagavatam. We can see that. So, this 14 in the Shraudha Sutram, 7 Somayajam, these are all included in the 40 samskaras, what they have to do. Samskara means that which purifies a person. That's what purifies them, right? Agnihotram is to be done at home. Yeah. Whereas Yajnam is performed under a canopy outside. You have to build a canopy outside. You've got space there, fortunately. For that. So Grihya Sutram, they talk about the domestic ones. That means those done at home. So you have seen there before, he said about Grihya Sutram as well as the Shraudha Sutram. Right? So Grihya Sutram are those ones what you are doing at home. Shraudha Sutram is the one you do outside. So this in the Brahminical language, when they die, the karmam is called Andyeshti. Andyeshti means the last rituals for them. Andyeshti at the end. Right? So they won't say death. They won't say death. For them, death is wrong word. Death is only for the body, isn't it? And Andyeshti means that you are leaving this world. That's how it is addressed. Andyeshti. The last ishti that you perform at the Andyam of this body. They say, we have come to this body and we have used the body for what we have to do and then we have left the body and we are going. That's how they look at the body. They don't make all these big boxes and worship and flowers and all this don't exist for them. Body is finished, go into fire, gone. That's it, finished. So, then they're saying here that this Kalpa Sutram talks about 40 samskaram, what we spoke about, and also 8 Atma Guna, means the characters of the soul, what they're talking about, right? So, like Garbhadanam, Pumsavanam, Simandam, Jadakarmam, Namakaranam, Annaprashanam, Chaulam, Upanayanam, which is the sacred thread and all that, Vivaham, Andyeshti. And lot of these are at a later part in life. Right? If you are doing all these 40 in a person, what will be his qualities, that person's quality? That is called Atma Gunam. What are they? First one, compassion. Compassion is the greatest quality in a person. Compassion means daya for others. Bhagavatam, how many places it is spoken? Daya sarvabhudeshu. Somebody asked Vedavyasa Maharshi, of all the qualities, what is that one quality you say you should have in everybody? His answer was daya, compassion. Compassion for other living entities. Because if you have compassion, what that means is, you have understood Shastram well. Why? Everybody has come to this world due to their karma. And they are suffering here. Everybody, every jiva is going through suffering here. So, how could you feel any hate or any revenge towards any living entity here? When they have taken that body due to their prarabdha. Nothing happened here by accident. Everything has happened due to some reason or the other. So, if a jiva has come here, being forced by its own karma, and accepted a body here, and suffering there, how could you be, under any circumstances, be hateful, or be revengeful, or give pain to that jiva? And that is why compassion is so important there. And then second one is kshama. Right? Kshama, or what we call patience. Patience, right? these are all the spiritual qualities for someone, right? Then absence of envy, anasuya, right? And then cleanliness, and then relaxed nature, not being obstinate. Brahmanas, you will see generally good Brahminical qualities. If you notice in someone, they are very relaxed about everything. They will do things in a very relaxed way. If you mix with them, you will know how relaxed they are in their life. They are not rushing for making money, or they are not rushing for exploiting anybody. They have got a way of life in which these are qualities which come from this samskaram, 40 samskarams, right? And then next one, a nature, a sweet nature, dealing with people, not being rude and violent and all that, aggressive and all that. Very easy to talk to people, all this. And then, more than that, freedom from greed. Freedom from greed and absence of desire. These are the 8 qualities which which is not easy to develop, is it not? By attending a course, you won't get it. But these samskarams will help you to get it. If these 40 samskarams are performed in a child, then that child should have these qualities, if it is done properly. That's the power. And that is why you will notice this, those Brahmin boys who had come from that kind of background and seeing their nature, you can see these things in them, that it is not that they have developed it here. It has happened due to these samskarams in them. That's how it has come to them, right? So these requirements are there for spiritual life. It helps a lot when you have these 8 Atmagunam in the self, that you have these qualities in them. Krishna says, this won't be there in Kali Yuga. Yeah? Everyone will be bereft of all these things. You can see, because of the circumstances and the way people are and lack of knowledge, everything. So what did Krishna say? Krishna says, when he talks about, you will see in the Bhagavatam, he mentions that, he said that, I forget that verse, he said that in the Ekadasham you will find Krishna saying this. He's saying, at least you must have these few. Everybody, dharmoyam sarvavarniga, he says. Everybody should have at least these few. And a few things he has listed there. 11, 17, 21. Ahimsa satyam asteyam agama krodha lobada bhuta prehide vacham dharmoyam sarvavarniga. Krishna knew that this won't happen, these 40 things. Samskaram won't be there, and these 8 gunams also won't be there. But at least these things, he's saying, what is the verse, which chapter is it? 17, 17:21. Yeah. Ahimsa satyam asteyam agama krodha lobhada bhuta priyahide hacha dharmoyam sarvavarnika. Ahimsa, non-violence. Non-violence means not just physically non-violent, but in speech, in thoughts and in action, all 3. Then truthfulness. Then not stealing others' wealth. Then kamam, krodham, lobham. Then doing everything to please others, for others' benefit. This kind of nature, Krishna says, one should have in Kali. But Kalpasutram says that if you perform these 40 samskarams, it will give this understand. These qualities will develop in a person like that. Yeah. So there is a lot about all these things. Kalpam also says, every little job what we do here, right? if a, whatever a Brahmin does, and however small it may be, it is connected with the Vedam. Nothing is outside the... For him, everything is based on the Vedam. Everything has to be based on the Vedam, right? That means every time he breathes and with every step he takes, can he get us the... He develops that strength inside. The divine forces helps him to develop that spiritual strength in him, right? So therefore it is laid, Kalpashastram or Kalpasutram are laid for this purpose. So now you see why all these things are. Which one? This Shiksha, Vyagaranam, Niruktam, Chandasa, Jyotisham, Kalpam. Starting from Shiksha, then coming right down to Kalpam. Kalpam is the last one. So if all these things are done, then that is what is basically Vedangam means. Now we'll go into little detail into these things, right? So yesterday we were talking about this. We got another half an hour. So we were saying this. We have two ways of knowing things: pratyaksham, anumanam. Pratyaksham means direct perception. Anumanam means inference. You infer things based on, right? So about this Vedam. Our problem is Vedam. It's problem in the sense that that's what people are questioning about the authority of the Vedam. That's what you're going back to now. People are questioning the authority of the Vedam. And especially with this modern systems where they want to give a time for the Vedam. And it's a big tussle between the Vedic scholars and the modern scholars. Right? Modern scholars are saying Vedam has a time when it was, which they call as Vedic times, which some of them say 3000 years before Jesus Christ, BC, before Jesus Christ. Some of them say little more than that, maybe 4000, whatever it may be, it doesn't matter. The scholars of the Vedam saying that, we don't accept this. There is no beginning for the Vedam. It is present in this world, kalpam after kalpam. Every day of Lord Brahma, it has survived. And therefore, there is no origin to the Vedam. This issue has been very, very much this is one of the ways that they try to push the Vedam down. It was one of the... may not have done it deliberately, but what could have happened is that they are under the grip of this thing called the time. And they find it difficult that anything can exist timelessly. They are finding it very hard to accept that. If there is something, it must have a time. They are convinced on that. Because they see everything in this world under the influence of time. So why an exception to the Vedam? This is their question. Now, it is the duty of the scholars, Vedic scholars, to prove that Vedam is not subjected to time. Do you understand? So it's a difficult job, but it is done by proper reasoning. If people who have got proper reasoning power and logic, who accept the logic, they can accept it. But often you don't find that in people's life, right? So that is the main argument. How do you prove that Vedam is timeless when the modern scholars are all insisting that Vedam has been time-bound, right? So now in this situation, pratyaksham, we don't have any proof, isn't it? There is nothing you can show by proof, by pratyaksham, directly there is no proof to prove this, that it is timeless. Neither we have got that. Imagine that I'm trying to argue on that basis, right? I don't have a proof to prove to you that it is timeless. I don't have a proof for that. Nor do you have a proof to show that it is 3000 years old before Christ. That's where we are starting from. Argument begins from that. You don't have a proof to show to me that it was written 3000 years. You are also speculating on some information what you have. Where is your proof? If you have a proof, you should produce it first and then argue about it. But that's not how it is done. It's done on the basis of their whatever they have dug from the earth and all kinds of that is not accepted in the Shastra. It won't be acceptable, right? So therefore they created this Vedic times, thing called Vedic times, and they develop all their history based on this Christ appearance, when Christ was born, before that or after that, right? So they will explain these things as though they knew Vedam was compiled so many years before Christ, right? And they also brought this theory called that Vedas came with the Aryans who came to Bharatvarsham, right? That's called Aryan invasion theory. Then they call that, like that. So, and they came gradually, and they say that this is their poetry, all these Vedam hymns are all their poetries, right? And some of them said, because they got frightened by seeing the thunder and lightning and all that, and therefore they were crying, and this is the cry, who Vedic hymns. This is how they have interpreted, all these interpretations are there from these so-called scholars, right? So some others are saying that these people who have come like this, these Aryans, and they had some poetical nature. So therefore, when they spoke also, they spoke in a poetical language, and that is Vedam. This is also their version. These are all different versions coming from the opposite side, right? And collection of hymns, this is their science, right? Now, whether it is or not, that's not our current issue. Issue is this, that we believe, when I'm saying is, I'm talking about on the authority of those who follow the Vedam seriously, right? Vedam is apaurusheyam. That is the first thing. And we stick to that all times. Vedam is apaurusheyam. Apaurusheyam means that we discussed it yesterday. Either it is eternal due to time, therefore it is called Abhaurushayam. And we also said that the Abhaurushayatvam, that means that it is not human manufactured. We say like this, that it stays forever. It lasts for a very... It has been ever-existent, in other words. Due to that, it's called Abhaurushayam, right? And then we say it is eternal because it's the truth. Based on what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Nasade vidyade bhav. On that basis. It is eternal because it is the truth, right? You remember in that verse what Krishna puts it like this. What is permanent is truth. What is temporary is false. No matter what it is. If it is permanent, it is the truth. So, the authorities on those who believe in the permanent nature of the Vedam, they believe like this, that it remains eternally, and because it is the truth, it is permanent. And finally, it has come from the source, original source, who controls everything at all times. First of all, you see, I will tell you something. It is important. We, whether you believe in God or not, that's not important. That's not so important. Because I have not seen God, you have also not seen God as far as I am concerned. So we don't have to fight over it. But we can agree on one thing, that this whole creation is working like this. There must be something behind it, without which it cannot go on like this. On that we can agree, is it not? So here, even though we don't see that power, which is controlling everything, and you see, if you look at our own life, you can see, we haven't got a clue what is going on here, do we? We don't know what's going on here. We have come here one day, got some body, and we are thrown at somewhere. And you are growing up with that body here, in whichever form it is, and whichever conditions you are thrown at. And you spend a few years here, and you go through sort of suffering and little happiness, and finally you leave your body and you're gone. That's all you know about yourself. Nothing more than that. So, lot of things are in darkness, as far as we are concerned. We have been thrown here, and we have come here, and we are gone from here one day. And there is, and this system is working. We go, another group comes. Children, grandchildren like that. And then they have their drama to do, and then they go. And another one comes after that. So this cycle is going on repeatedly. People are taking birth, and people are dying. In neither of these you have any control. Is it not? If a living entity is meant to take birth, he will take birth. At some or the other he will get a body here. If it is meant to happen. And similarly, if he is meant to die, nobody will be able to stop it. He will leave the body one day. You know how we say, devotees say like this, isn't it? If Krishna is meant to, what we mean is this, that if Krishna wants to protect somebody, he will be protected. And if somebody is meant to die, Krishna decides to kill someone, nobody can protect him. What that means is this same thing. So, those things are going on regularly, and it has been happening for how long? We don't know. For so long, this process has been going on like this. But we don't see the power behind it, but we are accepting it, are we not? So, what does that mean? You can accept things based on inference. This is inference it is. You are inferring that there is a power which is controlling and system is working. And the way the system is working, I can conclude that there is a power behind it. On that we can agree. You may not agree with about God, who is God and where is God and all that. That's another thing. But on this process, we have to agree. If you don't agree on this, then we can't do anything about it. So, inference is this. Inference means that you are able to agree with somebody based on not a direct proof. We don't have a direct proof for anything. But observing this world, this creation, and the way this world is running, you do see that there is some law behind it. We don't know those laws, what is controlling all these things. We don't know the calculations behind it, with each one of us, our life, individually and collectively. What's happening in our life, we don't know the laws behind it, but there must be a law which is controlling all these things. That's the first thing, to agree each other. And once you have agreed that, then you are, in the Vedic tradition, you don't call a person atheist. You are an astic. You are an astic. You have accepted the truth then, if you have accepted this. You don't have to accept that who is the God and where is the God and all that. You may or may not accept. That's another thing. That's not important. Important thing is this, that you have accepted that there is a power behind everything. And that is a very important step in life. And with that acceptance, our approach in life, attitude in life changes straight away. Because if everything is working based on some calculations, which we don't know, and under the rules of someone who is supervising this behind the scene, if that power, if you accept it, you have accepted God. Whether you have accepted a form or not, that's another thing. That's not important. Because people fight over the form, isn't it? Who is God? It has no value. Rishi's way is like this. Rishis are looking at life this. So here, they were saying about Vedam in this way, that Apaurusheyam. This is why Vedam is called Apaurusheyam, right? So they are saying that Aryans had come from outside, and that is how their version is, right? So if you ask them, what is the proof of that? There is no proof. This is all certain theories they have developed, because they thought they are looking at the people's body and saying that looking at the bodily features, they are different in the same country. People have different bodily features. So they started saying that these people are not from here, they must be from somewhere else. And this is how this Aryan theory, invasion theory developed. It's a total bogus and nonsense theory. Why? Rishis don't accept it. Rishis don't accept it. Right? And if you even study Ramayanam, will give you a better understanding about this. That nowhere this word Arya is used as a race. Arya means, basically what Arya the word means, one who have developed a higher principles of life. Who lives a life in this world for higher values. He is called Arya. Arya is not based on the body. Where these ideas they got it, we don't know. How they developed this understanding. right? Whereas they are seeing the body, 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 body all the time. And on that basis they are separating people, saying this, you are Aryan, you are Dravida, like this. Anywhere, wherever people are living for higher values in life, means self-realization, those people who have got a way of life like that, with the goal of realizing the self, the truth at the end, he's an Arya. He's Arya. Like Sita Devi addresses Ramachandra as Aryaputra. On what basis? It's on this basis. Sita Devi is knowledge personified, spiritual knowledge personified, Brahmavidya personified form of Sita Devi. She addresses Sri Ramachandra as Aryaputra. Why? It is on this principle that. So nowhere it is used this word Arya in any of the scriptures based on the body. And still they have developed this theory of Aryans and forced it upon our children at the school and colleges, and they have also learned it. Our historians have also learned that. And they are also saying the same thing. This is our misfortune. This is how things are. And that, because everything, when it is spoken and by these other, so there is no proof for all these things. That's what I'm saying. So when we say, we believe that Vedam is apaurusheyam, it has no beginning, right? And they say, oh, that's your belief, they say. If it is like that, your statement is also your belief. What else is that? It's just your belief is like that. Where is the proof for all that things? They don't have either. So, what I'm saying is that there is an uncertainty in all these things. And that you have to prove it by properly analyzing things. Why their arguments are not acceptable on this basis, right? For example, I'll give you how the Shastram deals with it, right? So, this is a book right in front of me, right? If I tell you this is a pot, your intelligence won't accept that, would you? Because in your intelligence, this is a book. In my intelligence, this is a book, but I am telling you this is a pot. You won't accept this as a pot. It is still a book for you. Similarly, if I say to you, Vedam is apaurusheyam. It is apaurusheyam, right? That state, how will you prove that, right? Your mind or your intelligence is not accepting it. When I say to you, it is apaurusheyam, right? So, I'm saying, okay, if you can't accept it, leave it, right? But then you have to leave the other concept also, what you have in your mind. That this Aryan invasion theory and all the other theory, what you have brought out, you should leave that as well. You can leave my suggestion that this is, if I say that if this is a pot, if I say your intelligence says to you it's not a pot, it's a book. So you can reject it. Fine, acceptable. But other things like the pot, like the timing of the Vedam is concerned. We say it is apaurusheyam, and you say it's your belief. I'm saying, if that is my belief, then your belief is that it was 2500 years before Christ it was compiled. That's your belief it is. They don't have any proof for that. It's completely misleading public by saying like that, right? So, in Shastram what they've done is, things what we cannot see in life, on which we haven't got any information, right? How we should think about this? There is a system for that in our Shastram. Because many things in the Shastram, we don't have a direct proof to show. So in such situations, what do? You have to have a way of analyzing it and way of finding a solution to it, is it not? Through your process of evaluation, how you do that, and there is a system for that, right? So, and that process, if you have one, you should show it to us. If you don't have one, we will show you our process, and you have to accept that. This is the way it is. It's called Chinta Paddhati. Paddhati means a process of thought, a process of analyzing a situation where you don't have a direct method of showing a proof, but you are dependent on various logics of how to analyze it. And give the understanding to the other side. So anything about which you have no knowledge, which you can't see with your eyes, and which you have to find out a proper analysis through that, right? So we have to go through two systems, right? So first thing, in our daily life also, there are many things we are accepting which things we can't see. For example, these gravitational forces, right? I have not seen gravitational force. You also haven't seen. But you are accepting it because on the power that things are falling off from the higher level to the lower level, right? So you know that it cannot fall unless there is some power behind it. And that is how the gravitational forces power was developed, right? And because they have established like that, they gave us, I have not seen, nobody has shown us this gravitational power. But we have accepted it, haven't it? So in the same way, we are willing to accept that. Even though you haven't shown us the gravitational power, we are willing to accept that, right? And in the same way, how to make this Vedam, which is Apaurusheyam, how do I prove that it is Apaurusheyam? Like the way we have accept this gravitational force, in the same way, how would you prove that Vedam is Apaurusheyam? Right? Now, Rigvedam. The first mantra itself is started with Agnimele Purohitam. This is the first mantra in the Rigveda. First Rik, they say, the Rik, is Agnimele Purohitam. So this Agnimele is a very well-known Rik, it is. Very well-known Rik, right? And this Agnimele Purohitam has been studied like that for how long? Even if you accept their timing of 2,500 BC before, till now it's over 5,000 years, isn't it? Even if you take that, and it remained as Agnimele Purohitam, it didn't change. Why? Agni means what? Fire. You know how many words are there for fire in Shastram? There are so many other words. Vanni is one of them. You can use. But if you use Vanni Mele Purohitam, you won't get the result. When you chant the Rigvedam, if instead of Agni Mele Purohitam, if you use the word Vanni Mele Purohitam, you won't get the result. For the particular mantram for which you have chanted that Rig from the Rigvedam, the results won't come because they have tested all these things. And what they are saying to us is this, that these were not compiled by an individual person like that, right? Because this has to be proven first, right? Neither by an individual nor by a group of rishis worked together and created this. This is what we are trying to prove, right? So, if I do not prove this, right, about Vedam, including Srimad Bhagavatam will not be valid. Do you know that? I don't know whether you understand the gravity of the situation. If you not prove the authority of the Vedam, that it existed all the time, and it's Apaurusheyatvam, the Srimad Bhagavatam also is not valid. Because its existence is based on the authority of the Vedam. Authority of the Vedam. Many things in the Bhagavatam is from the Vedam, apart from that, right? We are not realizing that, importance of that, right? So, Vedam, if you do not explain this, or prove this, including Srimad Bhagavatam cannot survive. It cannot exist. It cannot exist if you do not prove this Apaurusheyatvam of the Veda. Right? It is such a serious topic this is. Such a serious topic it is. People don't know these things. They are thinking that, oh, because they are studying Bhagavatam, I don't need to know anything else, and I go in a different route altogether. But if you talk to the Vedic scholars who knows these things very well and who study Srimad Bhagavatam, they know that all this literature is completely dependent on the Vedam. Completely dependent on the Vedam, right? So, so God exists, right? And if Srimad Bhagavatam is a proof of that, right? What is the proof for Srimad Bhagavatam? It's Vedam. Vedam is the proof. That means everything requires authority, right? If you accept Srimad Bhagavatam Pratyaksha Krishna Evahi, Sigridosi Mayanatha, Muktartam Bhavasagare, that's how we are praying to Bhagavatam, is it not? You know that verse, isn't it? What does it say? Srimad Bhagavatakhyam Pratyaksha Krishna Mevahi Sri Gurudosi Mayanatha Muktyartham Bhavasagari. This is what we are praying to Krishna in the form of He is Krishna's literary incarnation, literary manifestation is Bhagavatam. Now, this Bhagavatam, when you are praying, you are accepting that as the Pramanam, that He is Krishna Himself. Bhagavatam is Krishna. But its existence is dependent on the Vedam. Is dependent on the Vedam. And Vedam, in order that Vedam to become the authority, if Vedam has to be the authority for Bhagavatam, then Vedam has to be apaurusheyam. First thing. We can only go little by little, because these things you have to, little bit thoughts you have to put into it. And if you get it, it's good. But if you don't get it, you can't do anything about it. But the way it is that, because these are all subtle things behind it, how the scholars have spoken about Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is Krishna Himself. Krishna said to Uddhava, isn't it? I will enter into Bhagavatam, He said, when I was leaving this world. You remember? Palmapuranam. Palmapuranam says that, I will enter into Srimad Bhagavatam. Those who want to look for me, they can search for me, they will find me there. This is what He said. In the Palmapuranam Mahalmyam, if you read, you will find there. Krishna saying this to Uddhava, that when I leave this world, I will enter into Srimad Bhagavatam. And you can search for me there, and those who want to find me will find me there in the Bhagavatam. Krishna said this. So, this Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna Himself. It's not different from Krishna. But to accept Srimad Bhagavatam, how do you know that Bhagavatam is the authority? Because Vedam is the authority. It is coming from the Vedam. And why Vedam is authority? Because it is apaurusheyam. Apaurusheyam. That, so what we have to prove, this apaurusheyatvam of the Vedam, that is what is to be proven to others. Right? So now, let's look at this way. Right? If it is boring, we can stop now and continue tomorrow. But I know it is a little bit, it consumes energy. It's not katha. So, it's sometimes very energy draining it is. So, Vedam, we say, is permanent. Apaurusheyam, isn't it? Now, what is about, it is eternal, we say. Vedam is eternal. Why, on what basis do you say that it is eternal? When we talk about the soul, what do we say? It's eternal, isn't it? Soul is eternal, right? So, in that way, you can't say Vedam is eternal. Soul is eternal. If you say that, nobody can contradict that, because you accept that. You cannot prove it, that it is not eternal. How can you prove the soul is not eternal? That's not possible. But there again, Krishna's arguments in Bhagavad Gita about the soul, if you read, you'll find Vedam is Avinashita Tadviti, all those verses. When he talks about the soul, he puts it in such a way that the soul doesn't at any time non-existent. It's always existent. And what is changing is the body, and what is changing is the ahangaram inside. Jatasahi dhruvo mrityo dhruvam janma mrtasya tasmad abhihariyarthe. He says, therefore, wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead because of this. Right? So, Krishna's logic in those Bhagavad Gita verses, if you look, you can see there soul is eternal, and he keeps, Krishna hammers on that point, eternity of the soul, spoken there, right? But Vedam is not like that. It's not like the soul. What is Vedam? Vedam is a letters, isn't it? Varnam. Letters are called in Sanskrit as Varnam. So it's a combination of so many letters put together in a particular format. That's what Vedam is for us now, isn't it? If you want to read the Vedam, what you are reading is letters there, right? So Varnam, Varnam means letters, and Varnam then combined many letters, that is called Padam. And then many Padams combined together, Vakyam, sentences. So you have letters, then you have words, and you got sentences. All the three comes in there, right? So that is what Vedam for us at the moment, right? And when Varnam, letters, are put in a particular format, it is called Padam. Padam, word, right? Take for example this letter. One little word we take, example, Kadam. Kadam means pot, right? It has got this Ka and this Ta, two letters in there, right? So when you say these two letters in a particular order, Ka and Ta, Kadam, it comes, right? Only if it is spoken in that order, it is called Veda. If you change the order, it's not Veda. It's only Vedam if you speak in that particular order. You remember Kadam comes in the 12.5. Kadagasham, Madhagasham. When Parishu Shubrahma, she speaks about that. Right? So, this word Agnimile Purohidam, the first Rig in the Rig Vedam, there, if you, instead of the word Agni, if you use the word Vani, then it is not Vedam anymore. It's not Vedam anymore. So, there itself the problem has started. That means that these words what you find in the Vedam, those letters what were used to compile that word, has a power in that letters itself. And the rishis who knew the science of this, when they put these things together, which was given to them actually, not they did got it out of their own, it was revealed to them, but revealed to them, it developed inside, like Brahma has developed that knowledge in the same way. And they found out that these are the words they should come. And these are the letters they should form those words. And this is how all these words have come about. Agni and other words as well. Right? So, so the letter, now, one letter, it should be followed by another letter. Which letter should follow the first letter? There is a rule behind it, right? So, if the letter A, if it is followed by Ga, only then it will represent fire, Agni, Agni. Otherwise not, right? So, this order in which it happens, it will happen based on your way you pronounce that, right? And while pronouncing that, certain parts of our throat, and due to the interaction of all that, the air comes out from the mouth, isn't it? So that is when it turns out into the form of sound, it comes out, right? So that depends on our effort in these things, the order in which these letters will come out, right? So if you accept that these letters are permanent, don't worry about the words. Just accept that first the letters are permanent, right? And then the order in which the letters are spoken has come later. First the letters were the one which was, the potency was known to them. The potency of each letter was known to them. And then afterwards, these letters were brought together and words were formed. And they realized that what will come from that word. This is all the engineering of the words behind it, right? So, then, so, it is called krama. Krama means the order, right? And therefore, word is nothing but varnakrama. That means letters in an order. That is called a word, right? So such a word, you can't say it is eternal. You can't say it is eternal. Like the, we say about the soul is eternal, you can't say about the word it is eternal, right? Then why do we say Vedam is eternal? This is the question. This we will go very slowly, so we'll continue tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.